the Tax Conference Committee to order. And I think Senator Baca and Senate Conferees, we wanted to have staff work with some of the same and similar provisions that they've been working for, working on for all of us here. And I think we can adopt some things, hopefully, make some progress. So should we start with Mr. Michael or Ms. Soff or who? What do you guys want to do?
Can I just want to give you an idea of something I've been thinking about the last couple days that I'd like conferees to consider probably by this time next week, and I don't even know what it is yet, but and I'm sorry for being late getting down here, but I was on the phone with one of my county commissioners up in Cook County, and his phone message said, urgent, please call. So I called him, and he was very alarmed. The Ham Lake fire today burned about 12,000 acres on the Canadian side of the border. And this afternoon, the wind turned northwest, which means now it's blowing back down the Gunflint Trail towards Grand Marais. And they've lost about $4 million of property so far. And they're very concerned that the fire tonight is going to jump Gunflint Lake. And if that happens, it will burn Poplar Lake, which has about 100 buildings on it. And I just ask that you keep them in your thoughts and prayers, because Bob Fenwick is a very, very good man, and he was scared. And I'm scared for my constituents. And I bring that up because I asked council to start thinking about if we could adopt something, to put something in this bill to provide some kind of a property tax abatement for the people that are losing their property, and create some kind of a county aid so that the county doesn't lose the tax base, because the problem in Cook County is 91% of the land is owned by the government, and there's very little left to tax to start. So the county's faced with a real serious situation that seems to be getting worse by the day. So council's been working on a little something for me. I did actually talk to the governor's office in person last night about it. And so I just would like you to think about that next week. We'll see how things turn out here. But very, very concerned. It is hot and dry, and he said the winds were 25 miles an hour all day today. Yeah. So, you know, and I've always been very sensitive to floods up in the northwestern part of the state, and that's real scary. And I don't at all want to minimize the impact of that, but fire truly is out of control and will leap a mile at a time, and it's very scary. So please just keep them in your thoughts, and we're going to try and see. Commissioner's going to call me first thing tomorrow morning and let me know how the night went. And I'll know more tomorrow about what, if anything, the county's going to request that we try and help them with, at least in the short run here. I'm going to put a little hope back for people once the flames go out, because it's people are losing their livelihoods. A lot of small resorts gone. It's one thing to lose your home or your cabin, but you lose your job at the same time. It's pretty devastating. So thank you.
Senator Bach, you know, thank you for bringing that up. And Senator Bach and I actually talked about this yesterday, the day before we had any idea, all of us in Minnesota, how bad it would get, about what we might do for what we thought was a much smaller loss at the time. And members, both the House and Senate has a provision that on our side Representative Howes brought forward. I don't know who the Senate author was, but he had an arson situation and a much smaller situation, and both bodies addressed that in this bill and recognized that as a problem. And I certainly think we've now got a much bigger problem, and there's not many committees left who can try to do something yet this year for what's happening up your way. And I know in the House we definitely want to try to get something in the tax bill that will lend assistance and anything staff can find for us. And when we get a target and get it worked out, Senator Bach, I think all those people are in all of our prayers. So I agree.
I'm sure I was just
going to ask Representative Carlson.
When you told about the reversal and the threat to the next lake, Have they had to evacuate the area then?
They've evacuated everything, I think at least the last 20 miles of the Gunflint Trail is mostly burned now. And what they're worried about is it's going to burn back towards Grand Marais. And a lot of blown down trees up there and very hot. So.
And maybe we can continue to direct staff to keep thinking through. We've got a few days yet to think through how we might address that, and I think we're all committed to trying to get something done in that area. So thank you, Senator Bach. Ms. Off or Mr. Michael, you want to start? And do we have a sheet of paper for the conferees that we're going to work off of? I see you two have something, but I don't think we have it. Okay. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We'll let you keep that for now. That's hopeful, though. Hopeful that we'll get that far. You already got it? Well, I haven't looked at it yet. But that's okay. We'll take them, whatever you want to give us. Thank you so much. Are you in the... Are we all in the mood to actually do some adoptions here, I hope? Yes. Yes.
It's pretty easy stuff. Okay. Get it done.
Both sides move a bunch. It's not all one side or the other.
You move them. Yeah.
The first one.
Either one. This little stuff has to be. Yes. Well, we'll go through them, but I think.
That just does not.
You don't want it to be. You know. Okay. Who should we start with? You guys still working on something?
No.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get the. Okay. All right. Mr. Michael?
Chair, members of the committee on the list, the first item is House Article 3, Section 1, Senate Article 6, Section 1. There are minor language differences between the House and the Senate on the provision that relates to essentially prohibiting or stopping the city from passing a ban on hunting within the boundaries of the city and still receiving payments. The Senate language sort of explicitly says that the payments will terminate, whereas the House language is just a very short general statement. Senate language is probably more explicit in making it clear that the consequence of enacting an ordinance that prohibits hunting will terminate.
Senate language. Madam Chair, I'd move the Senate language, Article 6, Section 1.
Representative Scoy is moving Senate language here, Article 6, Section 1. Discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Mr. Michael.
Chair, the next provision is the Article 3, Section 3 of the House bill and Article 5, Section 7 of the Senate bill. This is the modular homes by dealers. I think that language is identical in both bills.
So move to adopt.
Representative Marquardt moves the adoption of both of these provisions. Everyone's got it. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails.
The next provision is the Article 3, Section 4 of the House bill on page 7 of the comparison, Senate Article 5, Section 10. The believe the only difference, this is the Elk River, Sherburne County personal property exemption. The Senate's effective date is tied to the property tax payable year, which is, or as this House has a day following final enactment. I think the Senate is the better approach to do this.
Representative Simpson, you would like to move this, wouldn't you? Representative Simpson?
Yes, I would. I'd move Article 4 of the House.
Senate language.
Okay, the Senate language has got the date that you want? Okay. I'd move Section 10 of the Senate language.
What member was this? And this was Representative Hackbarth on our side. I'm not sure on your side, but we'll take the Senate language. Looks like it's better.
I think it's Senator Colt. I don't know.
Okay, so Representative Simpson's moving the Senate provision here. Discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The motion prevails.
Chair, the next provision is the certificate of real estate value, which is House Article 3, Section 6, and Senate Article 6, Section 11. And there's a difference in this relative to if both the effective date and I believe there's a reference that the Senate requires Section 1031 exchanges to be noted on the certificate of value. Those are the like-kind exchanges that have gotten some attention because there's a feeling that they're driving up some areas.
Senator Skoy.
Madam Chair, the having a notice on the certificate of real estate for the 1031 sales would be helpful to our assessors as they evaluate the tax ramifications of the sale in value. And I would appreciate it if the House would consider including that, adopting the Senate language because of that reason.
So do we need to adopt both? Just use the Senate language?
Just use Senate language. So I would move Article 5, Section 11.
Everyone understand Senator Skoy's motion. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. The motion prevails.
That was Article.
That was Section, six. Senate Article 6,
six.
Section
five.
11.
It's five.
Okay, typo. Senate Article 5, Section 11. That's what we just did.
Senate language.
Yes.
The next provision is House Article 3, Section 10, and Senate Article 5, Section 19. This is the provision you were referring to before regarding the authority of the local units to abate fire-destroyed properties that were unintentionally or accidentally destroyed, not relative to the owner, not someone else. There's a small language difference.
The only difference is that the House sets up these categories in paragraphs and uses regular numbers, and the Senate uses Romanets, and the House is a better style. It's a better form.
Okay.
There's no substantive difference at all.
Well, Representative Marquardt moves the House language here now, and we're on House Article 3, Section 10. Is that correct? House language, discussion. Representative Simpson.
If we adopt this at this point, will that still give us an opportunity to use this as a vehicle?
Well, I think so. Would you like to hold off, Senator Bach?
No.
No, go ahead and adopt.
Okay.
So further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. The motion prevails. And thank you, Representative Simpson. Senator Bach will keep us informed of when we need to take the motion to help up north. Thank you. Mr. Michael.
House Article 3, Section 14, and Senate Article 5, Section 23, these are the Class 4D changes that allow, and there's a moderate difference in the percentages of units that sort of the minimum percentage of units that the development can have in order to qualify for 4D. The House sets that at 20%, and the Senate sets it at 25%.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the House language.
Yes, and I know, as members recall, Senator Ma was working with Representative Dabney on this, and so Senator Ma moves the House language of House Article 3, Section 14. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails.
The next provision is House Article 3, Section 26, Senate Article 5, Section 32, which is the confession of judgment. Provision, and I think they're identical. This is a department recommendation, although it wasn't in the department's bill.
I'll have to go back. Mr. Michael, I'm going to have to stop for 1 second. Can Ms. Schill join us at the table here? The last provision included money.
Oh, it did. Sorry. It did.
I didn't know that. Okay, so Ms. Schill, can you just explain the money difference here? Just to go back a second, because I think we're going to get to the House position anyhow, what
okay.
we want to do here. But can you just tell us what we just did?
Madam Chair and members, the Section 14 that you just adopted has a fiscal impact. It's located, and I have it as 218 on this one on the spreadsheet, and I know our spreadsheet has been updated since then. The difference is this. The House bill adopts it at 25% as the threshold for the 4D classification, whereas the Senate bill does it at 25%. The difference in the money, it costs $105,000 per year in the Senate bill. It costs $85,000 in the House bill. So there's a slight difference there.
Smaller PTRs.
Well, there'll be less shift to the.
Mr. Michael, can you say that into the mic? That would help, I think, for everybody, just to clarify.
Might be better to ask Michelle.
Yes.
Can you clarify why?
Why there is
the
a difference?
Tax effect there. Why the House is actually cost less than the spreadsheet?
Well, when you have a certain class rate of property, when you have a threshold that is greater. Basically, the property tax impact, you get more refunds when you are allowing more property to be excluded from the tax. And so in the House provision, and I'm hoping I give you those numbers correctly, yeah, the House provision, there would be less property tax savings, whereas in the Senate position, it would be $105,000.
So we're... Ms. Schill, is the crime-free multi-housing provision included in this?
No, that's a separate
estimate.
Provision
no.
entirely.
Okay. Well, it's good the House provision that Senator Ma prefers costs less, but Senator Bach, how you want to proceed?
Madam Chair, if we don't have $85,000 to spend, we should quit wasting our time here. So
okay, let's go.
I'm fine. Let's move on.
Okay, that's good. Everybody's comfortable with that? Okay, thank you for that. Thank you, Ms. Schill. Appreciate that. Mr. Michael, I apologize. Now we're on to confession of judgment.
Yes, and those provisions are identical in both bills. And so it doesn't, you can adopt either one. It's going to matter.
I move the House language.
Okay.
Article 3, Section 26.
Discussion to the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. The motion prevails.
One that's not on the list that Ms. Baker just handed me on page 10 of the side-by-side, which fits in right where we're at here, which is identical on section 13 of the House bill and 23 of the Senate bill. I missed this in going through and assembling the list. This is the manufacturer.
Was there a cost on this one?
I don't believe so. This is that situation where you have minimal improvements of 500, and we're raising the estimated value requirement to 1,000. It's the same in both bills.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I will move the same.
Yep.
Yes, I believe so.
Senate position.
Article 5, Section 22.
Does everyone get that? Representative Marquardt is moving Article 5, Section 35 of the Senate side by side.
Section 22.
No? Oh, I'm sorry.
Article
you're right.
5, Section 22.
Article 5, Section 22 of the Senate position. Representative Marquardt moves that discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Okay.
I'm sure the next provision is on page 19 of the side-by-side, and it's section 36 of the House and section 35, Article 5 of the Senate. This is the sustainable forest incentive payments. There is a slight difference in language, although I don't believe that there's any monetary effect of this. The Senate has the payment shall not be less than $5 per acre, whereas the House sets it at $5 per acre.
On the spreadsheet,
no,
though.
No,
I mean, no, there's no,
no cost,
difference, but
no.
Is there a cost?
No.
No.
That, this is below what the current level is in the program.
Madam Chair, I'd move Senate language, Article 5, Section 35.
Okay, so everybody have Senator Scoy's motion. Discussion to the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The Senate language.
The next provision is on page 22, and this is the Scambler Otter Tail County aggregate tax. And there's a slight difference in the language here. I believe that the Senate has a slightly different provision relating to the use of the proceeds, where the proceeds are required to be used the way general law permits those to be used, whereas the House has a more flexible provision for the town.
Madam Chair, I'll move the Senate language. It's a narrower use. I think, if I remember this, the
right.
We allow them to buy property with the proceeds of the aggregate tax, and I'm not sure. I mean, I'm for reclamation and things, but I don't know that we should be buying land with aggregate tax money.
Does that work for? Okay. Okay, so Senator Bach moves.
That's what it was.
Senate Article 7, Section 15, discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those
aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, Council reminded me.
That they wanted property tax
the mayor
relief.
Wanted to do
property tax relief
with the aggregate tax money. That's why the Senate, when we heard that, we decided we should tighten it up just a little bit.
And Senator Bach, I have that in my notes, too, and we appreciate that you took care of that. Okay. Well, this is money, but we're doing this.
Okay. Right. The next, moving on from property tax to one income tax provision. This is the military service combat zone credit that allows that to be retroactively provided to estates of decedents who do not have qualifying survivors.
Okay, so it's a negligible cost. We both got it, right?
Correct.
And is it identical there?
I believe so.
Is that the same?
So, Representative Simpson?
Madam Chair, I'd move the House Article 10.
Representative moves.
Well, I'm sure.
Senator Bach?
What do you mean by negligible cost? I mean, I thought we were hearing about $4 million for this.
This is the language. That's another one.
That's the doubling.
I thought so, too. But this is the other one.
It's just what.
So members are getting, or to clear up the confusion here, I think Senator Bach and I thought the same thing as probably most of the conferees did at first. We were thinking this was the doubling of the military service credit from 59 a month to 120. That's not the provision we're on. We're on the other one. And
well,
we've
it's
got
in the same
the
section, I believe, right?
Right.
So we don't want to adopt the entire section.
No.
No,
just
this.
You're just adopting.
This is just the clarifying language. So I can get it drafted up.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so Senator Bach moves the Senate position there. And is there discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
The next provision is House Article 9, Section 7, and Senate Article 16, Section 22. This is the Department of Revenue's authority to audit a state tax valuation. The House has the original department's recommendation, which would give the department authority, audit authority over all estates, whereas the Senate limited the department's authority to situations where there's not a dollar of federal tax liability.
Can we back up 1 second here, Senator Bob? It was 105. Okay, we don't. That's fine. No, tell Senator Moore, but that's okay. You want to let her know that?
But I
think, yeah, but I think we're fine. Senator Bach, the 4D1 that we took the House position is 105, not 85.
Right.
But we don't care. Right. We got that. I think we said 85.
Right.
Okay. So we don't need. Thank you for that. And I'm sorry. I apologize. What do you think about this federal tax liability? Anybody? Senator Scoy?
Madam Chair, I remember the discussion, but I can't remember the reason, but the Senate committee thought it was important to limit this to when there was no federal tax liability, and I was hoping Ms. Zoff would be here to help me.
She's right here. Ms. Zoff and Mr. Manson. We're going to ask him to comment, too, I think, to get us all back in that place, because he had a comment there. Mr. Manson, do you know where we're at here? We're trying to harken back to the discussion on the differences. The House agreed with your language. The Senate wanted to limit it to situations where there's no federal tax liability. Can you comment on this a little bit further?
Madam Chair, the House is the original Department of Revenue language. And then the Bar Association was concerned that we would be doing our own independent audit when a federal audit was already done. And it's definitely not our intent. So we, at first blush, we kind of agreed with the Senate language. We can live with the Senate language. It is a little limiting, but it's something we could live with. But our intention is if the federal has really done a pretty complete review of it, not just rubber stamped it, that we would live with that anyway. We don't have the resources to duplicate that effort. So, that's kind of the small.
That was a big deal.
I think the house is better.
Wants the other language, something to do with their the real estate provision. With Lloyd Groom's deal.
Are you here? I don't remember. It's too damn long.
You know what? I think, Mr. Michael, I'm going to make you explain this a little further on the mic. Senator Bach, all conferees, I think that, if I'm understanding this correctly now, you know, a lot of what we're trying to do this year, and both the House and Senate have based some of their funding decisions on tax compliance, and I think the House language gives us a little more tax compliance than the Senate language. So if Mr. Michael, could you explain to me a little further on, you know, if the feds don't audit, then I think with your language, Minnesota couldn't either. I don't know that we want to do that. Mr. Michael?
Madam Chair, the way I read the Senate language, it says that if an estate tax return is filed and has at least $1 of liability reported on the return, the Department of Revenue would have no authority to challenge the value on that return, even though the IRS may never have audited that return or looked at it, and the Department of Revenue may, for example, have good reason to believe that the value reported on that estate tax return does not reflect the actual value of the property. I suppose a compromise position would be that if the IRS has actually audited the return, and you know, the deal with the state tax returns is that they're just accepted by the IRS, and it may be that an auditor has looked at them and judged the value as good, or it may be not. Maybe somebody's just gone through and signed off on it. So what you're doing is tying the department's hands in terms of its ability to challenge the value that the taxpayer reports on the return.
Senator Bach, I don't know why we'd want to do that. I don't know who would be asking us not to do that, but you know, we've got a $1 billion tax gap here in Minnesota, and we're trying to bring in every penny we can without raising taxes more than we have to, and so every bit of compliance we can get helps us all a little bit. And
Madam
I would
Chair.
Hate to keep the Department of Revenue out of the ability to look at these folks. Ms. Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have any kind of history here? I mean, is the Revenue Department got any history on these? Or, and then I besides that, my next question would be was why would we go back to 05? Why wouldn't we go 06? So,
well, Mr. Manson or
kind of
Commissioner
history?
Inas or someone want to give us further thoughts here? Why go back to the year that, and then any history here?
Madam Chair, we haven't had the ability to audit state assets at all. I mean, it's always been up to the federal because we piggybacked on the federal estate tax. So we've never had audit authority. And why this is important is because now the feds have a $2 million threshold. We're only at $1 million, so there's a big gap there where they won't even have any interest in even looking at them. So that's kind of why we brought it forward. I think the effective date is just because I believe you have 9 months after the year to file this return, so I think that's kind of why we're looking back to, that's probably also when we decoupled from the federal estate tax as well. So that's why the retroactive effective date is in there.
I remember I'm working on it, so it's so technical.
Well,
we're trying to find Lloyd Grooms and see if we can bring him in.
I don't know who that is, but
he's the Minnesota Bar Association.
Mm-hmm. What do they care about compliance?
It was their
the estate
tax.
Yeah. Think about what that is.
They're people.
We know that. But we don't want to help them not pay their taxes.
No, we don't want to help them not pay their taxes, but
I don't know. Maybe is somebody here from the Bar Association who wants to tell us why they think revenue is wrong?
We just went to give him a call. Maybe we could come back
okay.
to it in a couple minutes.
We're going to come back. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, the department has commented about resources and so on, and I'd be curious why the commissioner is interested in going after what appears to be then if there are estates under a million, the small estates.
Mr. Manson.
No saying you go where the money
I think
is.
They couldn't before. Mr. Manson,
Madam
you understand
Chair, Representative Carlson. We wouldn't be all that interested in estates under $1 million because that's a threshold. Under that amount, you don't have to file an estate tax return. There's no liability. Of course, on the border, I guess we could maybe look at that to see if they're over. But mainly it's that gap between the $1 million and the $2 million that the federal threshold is at, that where the feds would not have any interest in really looking at them because there's no liability.
Yeah, Madam Chair, when I say under $1 million, I assume then you're wondering if they wouldn't really have been over $1 million, and so you're going after estates that are under $1 million to see if they, by understanding what your goal there is.
Mr.
Manson. If they're under $1 million, they clearly don't have a liability, so you must want to audit because you assume they may have been over $1 million.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, we wouldn't concentrate very much of our effort on the less than $1 million. It's the gap between $1 million and $2 million, and then even above that where the IRS might not have a lot of interest in, because they just, you know, a dollar is not the same as a dollar to us. I mean, they have higher thresholds than we have on a lot of different issues.
Well, I think we need
well,
to.
If they aren't here
we'll
in
just,
a few minutes, we'll have
yeah,
to
we'll
resolve.
Set this aside for a little bit, but
if they're not here, we'll
I just,
have to resolve.
I really do think, you know, I'll tell you, Senator Bach, just so you know, I think I upset Commissioner Inas because I carried a bill this year in the House to ask Commissioner Ines to find $200 million in uncollected revenues. $200 million. The House position came out with 81. I think the governor vetoed that. And I think the governor has proposed $40 million in tax compliance money. The House wanted 81 in our final position. I don't know what the Senate was, but my bill wanted 200. There's $1 billion of uncollected revenue in Minnesota, and I think we need to get every penny. It's every penny we don't get, then we got to raise taxes. So Commissioner Ines already doesn't like my 200, but I guess, you know, I'd like to have them audit folks that they currently can't, if possible. So if the bar folks show up, we'll hear them, and if they don't, we'll come back. Well, Senator Bach?
I'm sure there was, and it was too long ago for me to remember, but there was some reason.
Okay.
There was some reason that we limited the authority, and I just don't remember what it was. If it wasn't a good reason, we wouldn't have done it.
Yes, I know. And I'm sure if they've got a good reason, they'll be here. Thank you. Mr. Michael.
The next provision is Article 9, Section 16 of the House Bill, and Article 16, Section 23 of the Senate Bill. These are the provisions that change the commissioner's ability to dispose of tax-forfeited cigarettes and tobacco products, and essentially require the destruction of those products unless they're used in criminal law enforcement actions. I think the language is identical in both bills.
I think the Senate did it too, right? Taking the cigs away from the prisoners?
Madam Chair, this was the chair's bill.
Oh, he's hard-hearted.
Seems like a good vehicle someday. Might still be.
Still be.
Madam Chair, I'll move the Senate language.
Discussion to Senator Bach's motion moving the Senate language. That's Senate Article 16, Section 23. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, the next provisions, Article 9, Section 17 of the House, Article 10, Section 1 of the Senate. This is the life insurance premiums tax provision for Securian that essentially exempts premiums sold to state life group policies if the seller is domiciled in a state that has a similar exemption. There's no fiscal cost to this.
Senator Moore.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the House language.
Senator Moore moves House, Article 9, Section 17, discussion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bach.
I just want to get on the record.
Yes.
That in the event when Minnesota Life's contract comes up, I'd appreciate it if they wouldn't come in here and say, they now need, in order to compete, they need to be exempted from the, I think it's a 1.75%, is that what I remember?
For retaliatory?
Premiums tax.
Yes.
The premium tax.
Because they're being, you know, I just don't want to get into that situation now, 5 years from now when their contract comes due, that because they came here asking for this, and I want them to grow their business outside the state, but if we exempt what they pay here, there's a big cost. The state, if I remember right, it was a pretty significant cost.
And I want to, Senator Bach, I want to thank Senator Wants and Representative Hausman for bringing this forward. You know, they're helping the St. Paul company, and I thought they made a pretty compelling argument, Securian did. And members who may not know, Senator Moi would know that they had another proposal that actually cost the state money, and I think Senator Moi was judicious in choosing the proposal that actually did not. And so we're able to do this now, but your point is well taken, Senator Bach.
It's, I think, tens of millions of dollars. It's a lot of money.
Okay.
Sorry.
So Senator Moore renews her motion. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the remaining provisions on the list relate to the local mortgage registry and deed taxes, and the differences between the two is the sunset in the Senate bill, where they essentially extend for the new taxes, they impose a 5-year sunset, and for the existing taxes, they extend the authority for 5 more years. And in addition, the Senate has authority for a new authority for St. Louis County, whereas the House does not.
Okay, so members who heard the, and on our side was Representative Murphy, Representative Mulry, Representative Atkins, and Representative Portman carried these bills. And this seemed like a pretty responsible use of this money. So I guess, you know, Senator Bach, you made a good point about, you know, it's good to bring these back and take a look. And I think that's acceptable. I don't know how everybody feels about that. You know, I don't, you know, I guess within Hennepin and Ramsey, I'm not sure how long they've had them. And I don't know, Senator Moore?
Madam Chair, I work very closely with my county. We're very proud of what we've done with the money. I think that we look forward to an opportunity to come back and inform the committee. I think this is really good work, and we want people to know that we're very wisely using this opportunity. So when the chance arises, I'd like to move the Senate position
on all of them.
Stuff
okay, so, you know, Senator Bach, we really didn't talk about the St. Louis County one. You know, I thought we had this come up in our hearing. Why not just do the whole state? Did you think about that? Why not just do the whole state?
Why don't we do the ones that people asked?
Well, when St. Louis County gets theirs in a minute, I think they're all going to ask.
Well, they might, but St. Louis County actually asked last year, so it's not new. St. Louis County asked last year, so it's not new, their request. But.
Did we do that? Oh, the rail. That's the better one there, Senate. Senator Bach, did anybody oppose the St. Louis County one? Did anyone testify against it? I just remember the realtors, I believe, had a concern on these, but my memory is they were okay with these current mortgage and deed. They were a little more concerned about the affordable housing deed solution, and neither you, your bill or the House bill has brought that forward. But I think it's right for people to legitimately wonder what these mortgage and deed taxes go to, and neither bill is growing the proportion of the tax or raising the tax, and you know, I just don't remember if St. Louis County, if we even heard that one.
They're not going to be, I mean, realtors aren't going to be thrilled when we do these things, but I believe they probably have bigger fish to fry. But in the case of St. Louis County, just let me help make the argument in that I believe it's the third largest county east of the Mississippi. You know, they've got environmental issues from old landfills and things, I mean, all over the place. Big time.
Any other thoughts or discussion on all these? What happened to us with St. Louis County? Did you still put this bill in? A bill on this? Did you have a bill?
I can't remember. I don't think so. Just thought it was a good idea.
Yeah.
Coney requested it of me.
Because they know you're the tax chair.
They requested it last year of me, and I couldn't get it done for them.
Okay, so do we need to take these one at a time?
Well, you need to decide whether you want to use the House or the Senate.
I think Senator Moi is moving the Senate position. Senator Moi, on the top of page 75 of the side-by-side, we're now looking at the rail authority issue. I think you guys are a little tighter. I don't remember, you know, how this would affect Hennepin and Ramsey is what I'm thinking about now. Does not? Just for the new ones, that they would be in line with Hennepin and Ramsey?
Madam Chair, Hennepin and Ramsey currently can operate the fund. The county board can operate it either as a county board or an HRA or a regional rail authority. We didn't change the existing law for those counties, but for the new counties coming in, we took out the ability to operate it as a regional rail authority.
Senator, but I'm just wondering, Senator Moi, maybe you know, do the transit advocates, where are they at on all this? Because the regional rail authorities, really in Hennepin and Ramsey, are the folks who are working on Hiawatha and Central Corridor. And did the transit communities come in on this?
I don't, Madam Chair, Ramsey County is here. Maybe we can have them answer. I don't recall that being part of the discussion when we were addressing this in terms of the projects that we looked at, but let's ask.
Well, I think, Senator Bach, if I understand it correctly now from Ms. Zoff, Hennepin and Ramsey could use the regional rails, but the new ones coming in couldn't. And I'm just asking about the transit because there's a whole bunch of people who live in the metro who aren't in those two counties who would like transit to get into to the other five counties. So I'm just trying to figure out where we're going here. Welcome.
Hi. Nick Riley from Ramsey County.
Okay. And Terry Spiker, also from Ramsey County.
Well, we're glad you're here, but I don't think you have the problem we're addressing now. I think we're letting Ramsey... Yeah, we need Dakota or Anoka, I think, to tell us. Because I think Senator Moore and I and Hennepin and Ramsey, we're fine because we have it here, I guess is how we'd look at it. But the new counties, like Representative Dietrichs and others, I want to know if they wanted their rail authority as well. Welcome.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barry Tilley, and I'm here representing the Dakota County Board of Commissioners. Madam Chair and members, when Dakota County drafted its law, my county board said we want what Hennepin and Ramsey has, and we're going to use it for the same purpose to clean up the 2,300-plus polluted sites we have in Dakota County. For all practical purposes, I fully expect our county board will act as a county board and not a regional rail authority in applying these funds for cleanup. I don't think it makes a great deal of difference one way or the other. I have had nobody in the county raise an issue. The money is collected by Dakota County. The county board and the regional rail authority are the same people. They are, you know, the same bodies sit on both. I don't think it makes a great deal of difference one way or the other. Maybe Hennepin and Ramsey had a reason for doing it separately. We just copied the laws that Hennepin and Ramsey were operating under and having such great results from. So.
Okay, so Senator Bach, if I understand it, they're okay. Dakota's okay, whether it's in or out. Anoka, is Anoka here to tell us what they would like?
Madam Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association in both St. Louis and Anoka, as well as Dakota, are members of our association. I have not had specific discussions with the two counties on this particular point, but I believe the fact that regional rail authorities are one of the three entities that are authorized to administer the Environmental Trust Fund created with the proceeds of the tax is simply has the result that the legislation mirrored the existing Hennepin and Ramsey County statute. And it's conjecture on my part, but I don't believe it's of great import that the Regional Rail Authority, in addition to the HRA or county, have authority over the environmental account.
Senator Bach, Senator Moore, what do you think? I think you guys delineated Hennepin and County got it, and the other two didn't. And
Madam Chair, Senator Limmer and I believe Senator Johnson. Senator Johnson represents Anoka County, expressed some concern about the Regional Rail Authority having control of environmental remediation stuff. They felt it was better suited for the HRA or the county board, and I think that's why we narrowed it at their request. And Senator Johnson's a good member of the Tax Committee, and she represented Anoka County, and she requested we narrow it up. See, there's a problem with it.
Face doesn't tell me anything. You want to tell us something? I can't understand that.
Well, Madam Chair, do those counties, do they have an established regional rail authority?
Well, Anoka's going to have commuter rail, so I'm kind of interested in, I don't know who's going to not operate commuter rail and work in Anoka. Maybe, you know, I don't know if that particular senator is an opponent of commuter rail. I don't. Or for North Star, or I don't know. Just trying to figure it all out, because this didn't come up in the House at all. We just heard the bills from the authors, and they were all the same, and we said, okay. So we didn't have this discussion. Senator Moore?
Well, Madam Chair, I don't recall it being a really big point of discussion either. But I think as we're processing the bills, given the testimony, you know, and the responses, I'm trying to remember at the time, the reason why I thought this was kind of reasonable is because I didn't think they had regional rail authorities. And so I didn't think about that. But I mean, if the committee feels that we ought to be a little bit more open, or if the House would like to see that, I'm open to that.
So, Representative Dietrich, does Anoka County have a regional rail authority you know of? Yes, they do.
Yes,
Anoka
do.
County has a regional rail.
And we would really appreciate the House language.
Okay, so Representative Dietrich, who represents Anoka and has a regional rail, would like the flexibility in Anoka. So now,
welcome.
Madam Chair, Bill Schreiber representing the regional rail authorities in the Seven County Marion. Little history on this original legislation, which started with Hennepin County, and it related to a site called the Golden Auto Parts site in St. Louis Park, where there was a desire on the part to clean up, on the part of the Regional Rail Authority, to clean up the Golden Auto Parts site so a rail line could be relocated and moved over and move the what's called the Kenilworth freight line away from the Kenwood neighborhood in near downtown Minneapolis. That's how it all started. And so it was directly related to regional rail kinds of activities. And as I recall, the discussions then went on as well that both Ramsey and Hennepin County had the rail yards, whether it be BNSF or Canadian Pacific or Sioux Line, so on, that were located in those two counties, some of which are no longer being actively used as they once were. And some of those rail yards were going to be downsized. So it seemed appropriate that the Regional Rail Authority would be involved in those actions as compared to the county board. As it relates to the remainder of the seven regional rail authorities in the metro area, yes, they all are active. They're primarily pursuing the advancement of transitways in their counties, but they don't have the same kind of rail yards that Hennepin and Ramsey have. So my sense would be, as Mr. Carlson said, it would be nice to include it, but I don't see it as being essential because the other five counties don't have the same peculiar problems that Ramsey and Hennepin have.
Madam Chair, Council reminded me, we did have quite a discussion on this, and now Council jarred my memory. There are five uses of this money. Acquiring through purchase or condemnation lands for property that's polluted, one. Two, paying for the costs associated with indemnifying an entity taking title to lands or property from liability arising out of ownership, remediation, or use of land or property. Paying for the costs of remediating acquired land or property, paying for the costs associated with remediating property which is polluted or contaminated with hazardous substances, and then this one that the Senate language took out. Now, Ramsey and Hennepin have this, and we are proposing that Anoka, Dakota, and St. Louis do not have a use of paying for costs associated with improving the property for economic development, recreation, housing, transportation, or rail traffic. This is, as I understand it, this deed tax has been an environmental remediation thing. That's how it's been used. And one of the permissible uses of it currently is paying for the costs associated with improving the property for economic development. Just not sure that an environmental remediation fund gives them an awful lot of flexibility that might not be environmental remediation.
Senator Bach, is the Senate letting the Hennepin and Ramsey have that authority?
They currently have that, and our proposal is that we not change theirs, but at least if we're going to go forward with new ones, we not allow them to use what is currently being used as an environmental remediation fund or improving property for associated economic development. Pretty broad for an environmental remediation fund.
Well, then we should take it away from Hennepin and Ramsey, though. I mean, I'll tell you honestly, I'm uncomfortable treating members disparately here. We have, between those four counties, we have about 70% of the Minnesota population. I mean, why would we let Hennepin and Ramsey do this and these two not? I mean, maybe none of them should do it, or all of them. I don't know. But well, those four counties comprise, I don't know, 40, 50, 60, 70 House members. I'd have a hard time explaining why my county gets it, but they don't. So, Representative Dietrich?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to comment that in regards to economic development, that could be, you know, defined by the beholder. A lot of these situations in Anoka County, businesses have then decided to relocate. And so if cleaning up the land means that a business locates there, then does that mean that it's for economic development? I think that that might be, you know, an item that...
Well, Madam Chair, let's try to resolve it. This shouldn't be that hard. But
for their property, but there's nothing preventing.
You know, this has always been sold to us as an environmental remediation account. That's what it's been. But there's a broader use of paying for costs associated with improving property for economic development. If it's an environmental remediation fund, then that's what it should be used for. It shouldn't be used for improvements related to economic development. And I didn't want to pick a fight with Hennepin and Ramsey, but I thought if we're going to move forward and allow this for other counties, we should get the use narrowed out to where it should be. Now, whether we want to go back and see if Hennepin and Ramsey, to what extent they're using this provision, I guess we can certainly ask them, but I don't think, Madam Chair, I'd be surprised if you want to use this money for that purpose.
Well, Senator Bach, I guess the way I've thought about this fund, and I admit, you know, we had some testimony from Hennepin, and we heard a little bit from all of them, but I think Representative Dietrich's point is well taken here, that you clean up an environmental dump. But, I mean, these are mostly, in my understanding of the metro, these are mostly old city dumps. And they do become sites for economic development, but whether or not they're being cleaned up with that purpose in mind or not, they got to be cleaned up. I think it's just this mortgage and deed tax has just saved state taxpayers, honestly, from paying them. You know, you could argue that the state general fund should be doing this, but instead people are buying and selling homes are doing this. They're paying the mortgage and deed tax. So as people are in the market, in the real estate market, it's just skimming a little out of that fund to clean up some environmentally damaged areas. And I guess certainly some folks are then developing those. But I don't know.
But the point is, Madam Chair, in Part 3 it says that a permissible use is paying for the costs of remediating the acquired land or property.
So, Senator Bach, you just think it's duplicative, or?
Well, I think that 5 says nothing about environmental remediation. Nothing. That you just can pay for costs associated with improving the property for economic development. Could be whatever. Has nothing to do with environmental work. I'm sure this might be TIF steroids.
No. Yeah, I'm thinking that now. I'm thinking about TIF while you're talking, actually, and... we've got some people who want to talk to us, but Ms. Zoff or Mr. Michael, can you take us to the Senate language, actually, so we can actually read that and see what it says?
The House language.
Or the House language. Where's the House language? What page of the House bill? Because I'm finally getting your point now. I'm slow, but I'm getting your point. And I think Representative Dietrich would agree with it, too, if the fund is then being used to just do any old thing and it wasn't tied to cleaning up the environment. Is that what you're saying?
That's my point.
We wouldn't want to do that, and I don't think Representative Dietrich wants to do that either. But I think often it's our connected. Is there anybody know the page in the bill we might be on?
It's Anoka County. 191.
Anoka, are we looking, or Dakota, or?
Well, we look at Hennepin or Ramsey. That's good.
191 is Dakota.
Well, we want Hennepin because they took it out.
Well,
we have it. We have it.
That section doesn't show up anymore.
You have to look in the House bill.
Look at 192.
92?
7 and 8, and that's the same language in all of the proposals.
I don't see this.
192. Lines 7 and 8.
Okay. Does everybody have page 192, lines 7 and 8?
This was all done specifically for the Golden Auto Parts site. That's how this all came. Pardon?
Yeah, but this is, yeah, it's part of
the
a
property, yeah. Which, mean, which refers
right
to
back
these
to the
properties
beginning.
That they've acquired.
Maybe it's just a nuance here because the line 7 and 8 are referring to the property. So they're taught, as you read through the section, it's actually referencing, you know, these hazardous contaminated, you know, which are polluted or contaminated with hazardous substances. So it's not just any old property. Representative Simpson?
Right. Madam Chair, I think if Senator Bach wanted to have a little more reassurance, if you take... seven, line 7 and 8, section 5, and you just take on the page prior on article 1, section 1 there, took line 33 and just took off halfway through of lands or property which are polluted or contaminated with hazardous substances and add that on to line 192.8, it would give him, I think, the assurance that that type of land has got to get from cleanup or polluted property.
Madam Chair, my concern is on line 6.
7 and 8.
My concern is on line 6 where the last word is or.
Oh, okay.
Which,
oh,
okay. I mean, it, all the money could be used for just improving it for economic development.
Okay, so maybe, following all this, Representative Dietrich, I think maybe we need a little staff attempt to tighten up the language here because I think we're all saying the same thing. Representative Dietrich is saying we want to do these things, but only on this polluted environmental problem.
Contaminated.
And you're reading it, and I can see now why that you could read it as 7 and 8 as standalone, which we don't want to do. And Representative Dietrich, you don't want to do that either, right?
Right.
So maybe, is there a, does staff want to tell us how we could maybe tighten this up?
Change order.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dietrich.
Would it suffice if on line 7 if we put improving the contaminated property?
Staff?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
What do you think?
Yes.
That's already implied.
Still, yeah,
it's implied.
It, I think what they were after in the committee was to say there's very few resources coming in to do the remediation.
Right, right.
And that's what they wanted to focus on.
I get it. But I think that's it, what we
yeah.
think we're doing too. So it's just unclear.
I don't understand why we need line 7 and 8.
Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Bach, I'm not, it's hard to know exactly why they added this language back in, I think, 98 when this was passed, but I'm guessing that it in part was included because they didn't want to be splitting hairs and saying, well, was this absolutely necessary to do the contamination cleanup or the remediation, or is this really just making the property easier to sell in some other way so that it's more attractive for development. By adding this language, that concern goes away, but I understand what the Senate is saying is, gee, that may be the opening that you can drive a large truck through and spend a whole lot of money that's really unrelated to the cleanup, and it's really just more economic development in nature.
What thoughts, Ms. Zoff? What could we do?
Madam Chair, and I think the Senate Tax Committee was very concerned that when they had the testimony from even Ramsey and Hennepin, it was pretty clear that even though those were the counties that took in a fair amount of revenue from this tax,
the needs were far, the needs for the remediation itself, for the cleanup, were so great compared with the amount of revenue, and I think the committee wanted to focus on the remediation work, and they were concerned that this language, kind of the economic development aspect of it, you know, allowed for use of those resources in ways other than just remediation. And so they wanted to tighten it down.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Carlson, who's got a thought here?
Madam Chair, obviously Anoka, Dakota, and St. Louis County actually does not have this particular provision in its language, but I'm certain they would like it. But I will speak to the reason why. First, you'll note in Subdivision 3, there's a requirement that the entities seek matching funds from the Department of Training and Economic Development. And their criteria for developing or remediating this land is that they cannot just, as I understand it, remediate it to a no-use standard where it's safe, where the contaminants are no longer migrating to adjacent properties or to the groundwater that's in the vicinity, but that it's to such a level that the property can actually be used for housing or for another use. And consequently, the language in the number 5 on the house language basically permits that to occur. I'll also suggest to you logically, the counties in remediating this property do not intend that the property just lies vacant. They obviously want the property to be used for some use, whether that's for a recreational purpose, housing, or a commercial industrial use. So to the extent that it is required that some additional expenditures be made to facilitate that ultimate use, this authority under Clause 5 in the House language does permit those additional expenditures.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dietrich.
Yes, Michelle has just helped me with some of the language, and it definitely reflects what Mr. Carlson was just saying. And so I wonder if Senator Bach, if this would be comfort language for you on line 7, instead of the word that I suggested earlier, contaminated, remediated, so it would, and then before economic, use the word infrastructure. So the line would read, paying for the costs associated with improving the remediated property for infrastructure for economic development, recreation, housing, et cetera. And I think that that speaks to the fact that the land needs to be remediated in order to get its full tax value out of it.
If you expand it too much, they're going to come here looking to double the size of the thing next year. And you just start using it as an economic development.
Haven't expanded it. Biggest counties are on.
I know, but the more counties we put in it, the more of it's going to get used for economic development. They have huge environmental remediation needs in Hennepin and Ramsey.
They haven't tried it. Actually, I think Anoka's got huge ones, too. Who else has a thought? You know, I think we may have to just lay this over because this is difficult for me to figure out how these other counties should not get the same treatment that the county that Representative Dabney and I, and Representative Miles County, Representative Larson, Representative Carlson would get to do it one way, and then everybody else would get to do it a different way. So, I mean, this creates ill will when we do this stuff, so maybe we could take it away from Hennepin and Ramsey, and then I don't think they'd like that. So,
Madam Chair, I just on behalf of the three counties, I would volunteer. We're willing to work with your staff to make sure that this is constrained to only contaminated property. I think there are probably a couple ways that can be done. If that's the concern of the committee, we're willing to work with you to see that the only monies that are spent are for contaminated properties, and that this does, I think the language already implies that, but if you wish us to make it more explicit, we'd be happy to work with you.
Mr. Carlson, I think Senator Bach is signaling that he absolutely thinks the language is too loose in the House, and he does want to have comfort that it's going to be used for these problem properties. And Representative Dietrich, I don't hear her disagreeing with Senator Bach on that. So I think we need a creative solution here. It'd be best if we could get it yet done tonight. Otherwise, we're going to end up laying this over because we, Senator Bach needs comfort language, and I'm not comfortable the other way, going back to all the members who represent these other counties and saying, well, you just didn't get what Hennepin and Ramsey got. And I don't think anybody's trying to divert money for things that aren't for the environmental cleanup, but I think Senator Bach's making the point. When you read the language, it can be construed that way. So I mean, think we need to fix something here.
I mean, Madam Chair, you easily could use, under this language, you easily could use it to build some kind of retaining walls or sound barriers or you know, kind of whatever you wanted to do that weren't at all related to environmental remediation. And this has been sold as an environmental remediation fund.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it certainly could be used for, you know, those are the first couple things that guys come to mind, I guess. But
Senator Moore, your thoughts? No. Mr. Schreiber?
Madam Chair, I think inherent in this is probably utility relocation. And if the property's contaminated and you're going in and you're digging it out, you're probably going to get into the utilities. And as a result of an economic, if you're going to prepare it for a future sale, you may want to relocate those utilities into some other location and so on. And those expenses ought to be a part of the fund. It'd make more sense to relocate them than it would put them back in exactly the same place.
Senator Bach, conferees have this little picture of Hennepin in front of them. I wish we had them for everybody else, but what I would worry about is thinking that because Anoka is not as big as Hennepin and Ramsey, that it doesn't have as much polluted areas to deal with and it might kind of go off. When you take a look at this little Hennepin map with this cluster of pollution, and you just look up north into the white where it ends, looks exactly the same. It would be all red there, and that's Anoka. So they're going to look at this line and say, everybody below here gets health, and everyone up here, that's Anoka, we don't. And they're just full of these sites as well because they've got the river and they have all the development that took place over time around there. So they don't look like this. I guess, you know, Senator Moi, the white over here, Anoka looks like the red core here. So, and then Dakota, I'm not as knowledgeable, but not having the maps, I'm not as concerned because I think they've got a, you know, and I don't know what St. Louis County looks like at all. I don't know if it would look really white or really red, but
really big.
Really big. And we,
Madam Chair, my concern is that if we make the uses too broad, we're never in two lifetimes going to get to all the cleanup that needs to be done. And the point should be to try clean up as many sites as possible. It's a limited amount of money, and the more money we allow to be expended on each piece of property, the less sites we're going to get to. And it'll take lifetimes to ever get to all the dots on that map. And somebody will be back in here saying, well, you know, if we just had twice as much money, we can start getting to these sites.
Well, Senator Bach, I can't imagine if, you know, boy, the problem is so much bigger than this mortgage and deed is helping. But I hear what you're saying. I mean, I think we have to, I just continue to think we're going to have to lay this over and come back because I am not comfortable telling Representative Hortman, Senator Dietrich here, and then Representative Atkins for Dakota and their coalitions of legislators that they didn't get equal treatment. So I'm hoping that the people who are listening in the room are going to go try to work really hard now to create some language that Senator Bach feels comfortable with so that everyone, including and Representative Dietrich, feels comfortable with so that we can make a decision tonight. If not, we're going to have to go back and check in on our side with all those legislators. But I think if folks who are listening can try to find something, maybe Ms. Zoff and Mr. Michael can, that Representative Dietrich and Senator Bach think works, I think we're good to go, but otherwise, it's difficult to explain.
Madam Chair, Hennepin names it the Environmental Response Fund.
Yes.
And it does great stuff. Hennepin and Ramsey both told a very good story about the kind of projects they've been doing. And I'd like them to do more projects, not spend more money on a smaller number of sites.
Senator,
but maybe we ought to leave it up to them to, I mean, I think they've heard the discussion. Rather than burden our council with it,
right,
we ought to leave it up to them to come up with a suggestion. And if we don't come up with one, the language just falls out and the program goes away. Because there's a sunset on it that we're extending.
Senator Bach, did you have testimony that made you think that what was happening with this money is the folks who have it, in this case Hennepin and Ramsey, are doing a few things luxuriously as opposed to a lot of little things, bare minimum? Was there some testimony that made you think that? Because we didn't have any testimony to this level.
It's, and I'm sure it's one of the advantages of having a smaller committee. Is individual members have more time to interact and have a discussion, and I would encourage you, if you can get to a smaller committee, it's easier for your chair also. And the committee felt comfortable that Hennepin and Ramsey were using it well. I do remember we were concerned that Hennepin has got about a $8 million carry forward that they haven't expended.
We had that concern.
That was part of the reason for the sunset. We wouldn't want them to come back 5 years later and have a $20 million unexpended balance, because we know they have plenty of sites to work on. But Senator Johnson, in moving it out to Anoka County, if I remember right, had concerns about that potentially under the language it was going to get used for things other than environmental cleanup, over and above the remediation that I think Hennepin and Ramsey are doing a very good job with. But I remember it correctly, Senator Johnson sits right there. She had a concern in bringing it into her county that it might not quite be used the same. And we all agreed that Hennepin and Ramsey are doing a good job.
Look good.
And so
Maybe Senator Johnson should come. I mean, I don't know if this is tied to North Star or not. And if there's a fear that this fund would be used, and I don't know where she is on North Star, but I know that Anoka delegation tends to be fairly divided on North Star. I wouldn't want that to enter into our decision on this, which is not a North Star set of bills. So,
Madam Chair, under the current law, if the rail authority can administer the money and the money can be used for costs improving property for economic development, recreation, housing, transportation, or rail, it might have nothing to do with remediation. Maybe we can give people some homework.
This is a Sunday project.
Sunday is Mother's Day.
Representative Dietrich, and I am one. Representative Dietrich is too. Representative Dietrich.
I would just like to add that, I respect the fact that you wish, Senator, that we could do more sites. And I found in my notes here a map of Anoka County and the different cleanup sites that they have. And along with that, when Representative Hortman gave testimony, she spoke to the fact that businesses to the south used Anoka County as a dumping land for quite some time because Anoka County still is fairly rural in nature. And in fact, as far as meth homes and that type of stuff, we have the most behind Hennepin County because of its rural nature. And so I think there is plenty need there, and if need be, I can make a copy of this map of the different sites. But I think that there is plenty of need there. I don't think that they're going to use this money to spur economic development. I think that there's plenty of need here to be cleaning up contaminated sites.
The Senate agrees, or we wouldn't have put Anoka County in the program.
Well, I don't know what Senator Moore thinks. I think if Dakota and Hennepin and Ramsey and Anoka could come up with language that Representative Dietrich and Senator Bach thinks works, we'd be set here. But otherwise, I don't think the House can act on this. I really have to go back and talk to lots of legislators. You know, these bills that Portman and Atkins were carrying were bipartisan bills for many legislators who represent those two counties. And this just didn't come up in the House. So, I'm concerned that somehow Transit's getting involved in this, and I don't know that to be a fact, but I'm concerned that that's in play here. Senator Juan.
Madam Chair, I withdraw my motion, and why don't we give a little bit of time? I'd like to talk to Ramsey County to see if, as I understand it, we have so many projects that the money that we use really is for the contamination cleanup. And so I'll do a little bit of research in terms of, you know, what my county's needs are and how we use it. And I'd be glad to work with Representative Dietrich or, you know, anyone else to try to see if we can come up with some solution.
That's a great idea. Senator Moi is withdrawing her motion, and I think Representative Dietrich and Senator Moi, I think that's a great idea. Representative Dietrich, what do you
Did you want to take one more stab at language, Madam Chair?
Well, Senator Bach. Nope, shaking his head no.
Okay.
No stabs at language, but this should be fairly simple. We just sent our score.
Are we ready to move on?
We are.
The Minnesota State Bar Association is here to help us understand the state.
Okay, are we done talking about St. Louis too for now? Okay, we'll do all those later. Okay, so the Minnesota.
I think it's a good idea to have them all consistent.
Yep.
I don't disagree.
Okay, and they should all be motivated, because if we don't do anything, Hennepin and Ramsey as well won't like that either, so I think they can all get to work on that. And Senator Juan, Representative Dietrich have indicated they are willing to work with everyone on that. So we appreciate that, Senator Juan. And the Minnesota Bar Association?
State Bar.
State Bar is here to do.
Mr. Groom, help us understand the Senate language with regard to the estate tax valuation.
Estate tax. Yes, okay. Somebody wanted to speak to us? Welcome. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lloyd Grooms. I'm with the Minnesota State Bar Association. I was speaking to the question of valuation of assets for estate tax. The language is relatively comparable. There is a difference. The Senate language was meant to address the question of when there may be a disagreement between federal and state, and what we tried to do in reconciling that was to provide the taxpayer with certainty, given you will have a federal tax liability. If you, in fact, have a federal tax liability, then the federal tax valuation would control. The reason that we said there is a tax liability is so that the department is not simply relying on the filings by a taxpayer, but in fact there has been a determination that there is liability there. So that's the distinction that we tried to make, so that it would be if you have a federal tax valuation but also federal tax liability, at least have paid a dollar in federal tax, that federal tax valuation would control. There would not be another valuation by the state. The reason for that is to not have a disagreement between the federal evaluation and the state valuation, which then would provide confusion and would, if you will, undermine any certainty that the taxpayer, as well as any beneficiaries from the state, would have for the valuation.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Manson.
Yeah. I think we're both trying to achieve the same goal. We don't want to redo or undo what the feds have already done.
Right.
We don't have the resources or anything.
Right.
So, and we kind of agreed with the Senate approach, but then kind of in reviewing it was a little mushy. But I think we could live with the Senate approach. The intent is not to duplicate or undo a federal audit. I think we're trying to achieve the same thing. It's hard to put it in the language. You know, when we wouldn't do it and when they would. And
why would we redo the work of the Internal Revenue? If they've done the work, come up with the valuation, why would we want to spend the money to try and challenge the Internal Revenue Service's valuation?
Senator Bach, I don't think that's...
I think that is what we're
saying. That's what it
saying.
Is.
Well, I disagree. I think what it's about is whether you've been, if you're audited, that's one thing. If you're not, it's another. Mr. Manson?
Madam Chair, you're correct. If the federal have done an audit, an actual audit, we're not going to redo that work. Right. It's kind of whether they accept the return is filed, then we still would want the ability to audit. And I think Mr. Grooms is saying the same thing. We're trying to just get it in the language. And I think Mr. Michael might have had a suggestion. If maybe if we combine a federal audit with at least a dollar of liability, that might work. And Mr. Michael has
thoughts
on that.
That would work.
But I think we're trying to achieve the same goal.
But when they have been.
If you don't want to go in and read it. Exactly. Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, I think we can work on language to achieve that. There's another difference that you need to be aware of. The House, following the Department's original proposal, has an effective date that is tied to a state of decedent's dying after December 31st, 2005. The Senate deleted the effective date altogether. There's a situation for these gap estates, or if you have an estate value where you have no federal tax liability. So, for example, let's assume you have an estate of $1.7 million. You have no obligation to file a federal return, and the department now has no authority to audit that return. And so when you don't have an effective date that goes back, or at least for returns that, say, were filed maybe 2007, or 2006, the department, as it is, the department is sort of defenseless going back to, 2000, basically going back farther than when the federal credit was. Essentially, the department's in the position where they don't have statutory authority to challenge whatever return has been filed with them or taxpayers for estates that don't have a federal filing obligation. So I think you want to have an effective date that sort of parallels sort of what the department originally had, so at least they can audit those folks.
Madam.
Mr. Manson?
I agree with Mr. Michael. I don't know if Mr. Grooms wants
to. Mr. Grooms?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we agree.
So it sounds like this hybrid concept of Mr. Michael's with the change in the date could work. We all agreed with that? Can we move that, or you want to bring back language later? What's the better way?
We'll bring back language.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Grooms, for coming.
And I'm chair members of the committee. Thank you.
We all understand it better.
Yeah, we're all more informed. Okay. Thank you. We appreciate that. Did we get through the whole sheet except for the deed stuff that they're all out in the hall working on, so you never know what they might come back with? Yeah, we're holding on all those. Was there anything else in the sheet that we missed?
Oh, those were all.
Okay, so, Senator Bach, Mr. Michael, what about the studies? Do you have the list of the studies? Do you want to look at the studies? Start the spreadsheet. Whatever. Well, I don't know who's here. You guys want to start the spreadsheet? How about your side? They want to start the spreadsheet?
I'm sure you've got the gab.
Well, we want them up there, too, though. They have some. On the spreadsheet?
Well, sure.
I think we should. You think? Chart the money. Did everyone? Okay, sure. I think we're going to look at the spreadsheets then for a while. We're stopping. Okay, so we're not handing that out though, right? We're not handing
that
out.
Yes, until we're done with this.
Okay. We're going to have folks with the spreadsheet join us at the table. So, you know, the spreadsheet is long, detailed, and for a few people in the room, it's fascinating. I'm actually one of those people, Senator Bach, but for most people, it's not. So maybe we ought to see how far we can go before people glaze over. And I don't know, Senator Bach, maybe you could give me an indication. Do you guys want to hear line by line every description in detail? Or Do most folks feel like we can clip through this fairly fast? What's your thought, Senator Bach?
That many here, we can go line by line.
Well, there's 349 lines. No, wait a minute. 379 lines.
They don't all have.
Well, but they, I think when they, if we have them go line by line, they're going to read the governor's position to us, and they're going to, you know, they're going to, that's what I'm saying. Do the governor ones, whether we you have them or I have them.
I'm not sure the last three pages have all zeros all the way across. It's really 284.
Okay.
I don't know.
We
don't need the governor's one. Who cares?
Well, that's how they'll get direct from that.
It seems like you're tied to remediate. Sort of this. It's like hanging it up.
I just got one handed out. Just one.
Actually, it's this one.
You're special.
Let's take questions.
Yes, I do.
Okay. So, thank you both for joining us. We are going to start the spreadsheet. I think we're thinking, due to the hour, that we probably don't need to hear all the ones that are neither in the House and Senate. And we can probably do them fairly quickly without a lot of description. But we'll just have all conferees ask questions as we go. So we'll just stop for anybody who's confused with anything. So who would like to begin?
Madam Chair.
Templin is going to start us on page one.
Madam Chair, just to bring to your attention, we're working off of the spreadsheet.
Okay, hang on 1 second. You know, Senator Bach, if I might, I had someone tell me last night that no one can hear in this room. And I have noticed that when you're not in this circle and you're in the outer circle, you can't hear anything here. And then the mics aren't close to us, so that makes it harder. So the spreadsheet is pretty detailed, so if we can have folks just be a little bit quieter. I know everyone's trying to get their business done, as we all are, but this one gets a little sticky. So if we can try to hear Ms. Templin and grab that mic, Ms. Templin, so we can all hear you really well. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just want to bring your attention to the spreadsheet that we're working off of. We are working off of the May 10th, 2007 spreadsheet, and that is in the upper left-hand corner. Please be sure that you are working off the most updated spreadsheet. And with that, I will proceed with federal conformity. In the House in fiscal 08-09, federal conformity, and I'm looking at line 19, The total cost in 08-09 is $32,505,000. In fiscal 10 and 11, it's $19,895,000.
And the Senate has the same position along with the governor on that, on federal conformity. We're all consistent.
She needs the mic. We couldn't hear you very well. Did we all notice that?
I'm sorry, Madam.
We need the mic
Chair,
a little closer on you.
I will sit closer to the mic. Thank you.
And you know, we've got the same problem because they're just, you know, I think you can put them, I don't know. We noticed the difference on that. Thank you.
Don't pick it up.
Madam Chair, line 23 in the House, there is a provision for the new top rate at 9%, starting at $400,000 for married joint filers. In fiscal 08-09, that raises $452.7 million and $452 million in fiscal 10 and 11. That should be very familiar to most conferees at this point.
The Senate does not have a position on that line.
Line 25 of the spreadsheet is the indexing of the AMT exemption phase-out threshold. The cost in fiscal 08-09 for the House is $700,000, and in 10 and 11, the cost is $1.7 million.
And the Senate does not have a position on that line?
Line 26 of the spreadsheet is the subtraction for active duty military outside of Minnesota. The cost in 08-09 is $525,000, and in the tails, it's $270,000.
The Senate has the identical position.
Line 27 of the spreadsheet is the active military combat zone credit increase. This is the monthly credit of $59 under current laws increased to $120. The cost in fiscal 08-09 is $4.8 million, and in 10 and 11, it is the same.
The Senate has the identical position.
Madam Chair, I am skipping lines 28 and 29 because those are governor's positions that were not funded in either the House or the Senate. So proceeding to line 30 is the contractor payment withholding requirement. That's the 2% requirement. This provision raises $4 million in fiscal 08-09 and $4 million in 10 and 11.
And the Senate has the identical position. And then the line below that on line 31, the Senate provides an income tax credit for citizenship expenses at $3.4 million in 08-09 and $4.1 million in 10 and 11.
The House does not have a provision. Line 32 of the spreadsheet is the repeal deferred compensation exclusion for non-residents. In fiscal 08-09, this provision raises $4.6 million and $5.3 million in the tails. And I believe this is,
The Senate has an identical position on that line. And in line 33, the Senate also prohibits the deductions for fines and penalties, and that raises a small amount of money, $290,000 in 08-09 and $200,000 in 10 and 11.
The House does not have a similar provision.
Excuse me. Can you recall for me that, Senator Bach? I'm trying to remember that one now. Prohibit deductions, fines. Was that off your income liability?
Yes. It's under the for instance, if you have an OSHA fine or an OSHA citation, you can't deduct it from your tax liability. You think is that accurate? Yeah, it's a good idea.
Okay, thank you. Apologize.
On line 34, the Senate provides the refundable income tax credit for home care. That was a credit of a maximum of $1,200 a year. And the total expenses for that in 08-09 is $22.5 million, and in 10 and 11 is $57.6 million.
The House does not have a similar provision. Line 35 of the spreadsheet is the subtraction for AmeriCorps, the National Service Trust Education Awards. The cost in 08-09 is $200,000 and the same in fiscal 10 and 11.
And the Senate has the identical position.
And line 36 of the spreadsheet is the income tax interactions with the property tax provisions in the bills. And this raises revenue in fiscal 08-09, $9 million. And in fiscal 10 and 11, it raises $15.4 million.
And the Senate has the same provision, although the revenue raised on the Senate side is slightly less, $6.35 million in 08-09 and $7.9 million in 10 and 11.
Line 37 of the spreadsheet on page 2, starting at the top in 08-09, the dependent care credit for licensed family daycare, changing the maximum age from 6 years to 13 years, there is a cost of $40,000 in fiscal 08-09 and $40,000 in the tails.
The Senate does not have a comparable provision.
Line 38 of the spreadsheet, the House is carrying a cost, line 39 of the spreadsheet, the House is carrying a cost of $2.3 million for expanding Section 125 plans. This was in the House Health and Human Services bill. It was an appropriation for the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange of $6 million. And the cost in 08-09, again, is $2.3 million. In 10 and 11, it's $14.4 million.
Why are we carrying the money?
Senator Bach, well, and I have a question on here, too. We think in the House we're carrying the governor's provision and Representative Huntley's provision on Section 125. We think it's the same as the governor. And now I know we're not covering the governor pieces here, but the governor's got another line. And I think the House thinks it has the same provision as the governor. So,
Madam Chair, yes, it could be very well in the same line. It is identical, except in the governor's provision. However, his recommendation was to cover the revenue loss with the health care access funds.
Okay. Now to Senator Bach's question.
Why are we carrying the money if the money is being spent in their bill?
Well, they are spending money, but I think there's a loss in revenue to the state due to the fact that more of these, if I understand this correctly, and I'm not on the health committee, but and maybe Mr. Michael can jump in, but I think the way it works is that if more of these businesses are going to get assistance in providing health care to folks, then because they're going to get a tax credit to do so, they're going to pay less taxes to the state. So it's a revenue reduction on the tax expenditure or on the tax spreadsheet. And I don't know how we could let the health folks carry it.
Madam Chair, the health committee should not be spending money out of our targets.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Templin.
The Health and Human Services Conference Committee report did include the appropriation for the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange, which would have the impact on Section 125 and individual income tax revenues, which would have the same revenue reduction loss. So they have closed up their bill, but that bill has been vetoed. So,
Ms. Templin, is it safe to say that if Senator Berglund and Representative Huntley put it in pre-veto, we were sort of double counting if they would have been carried in both?
Madam Chair, that cost was not carried in their bill.
In
the Health and Human Services bill?
It was not.
Madam Chair, I would like to have my fiscal analyst object to the Senate fiscal analyst that you can see the Senate's not carrying the cost. We don't think we should have to carry the cost in the tax bill. And it's going to come out of, we have to raise money to pay for that.
Yes.
And I don't want other budget divisions carrying tax provisions in their bills and then just sending us the tab over here.
So Senator Bach, you wanted, if you were agreeing to what Senator Berglund was doing, you wanted to carry the full policy piece that made it happen over here too, if you are willing to buy it?
Madam Chair, I don't want other budget divisions deciding that they want to go do some tax credits of some kind and then just not talk to us and just stick it into our bill. I think we had this discussion some time ago, you and I, about where it should be carried. In fact, I think we talked about it on the floor.
Right.
I even forwarded you an email.
Yes.
I believe, and then I don't think we ever circled back on it. But
maybe I wasn't clear, Senator Bach. The House conferees support the provision. We agree with the governor on this. And we are supporting of these Section 125 plans. So we thought kind of just the opposite, that if we were going to agree with what the health folks want to do and they were trying to do tax stuff, it had to be carried in the tax bill. We didn't want to let them carry tax provisions, but we agreed with it. Now, I don't know that the Senate supports this provision, so it would make sense you don't have it.
Madam Chair, I'm fine with the program. Health and Human Service can create as many programs as they want. Just don't ask me then to pay for them in my target. I mean, if they want to take it out of the health care access fund like the governor did, that's fine. I mean, if they want to take it out of the general fund target, that's fine. But don't create the program and not carry any money to pay for it.
Well, they're carrying Representative Carson.
I think when we were setting the targets on the health side, though,
yes,
we calculated it that way.
We did.
So there's probably a difference here in terms of how the two bodies set their targets. We accounted for it. We set the targets on the health side.
Thank you, Representative Carlson.
So it's not in the target of the Health and Human Service bill?
That's correct.
What I'm hearing?
Right. We accounted for it, if I recall correctly, here.
Yes, and there's some there. But Representative Carlson's right. In fact, when I met with the speaker to fight for my target, I told her that one of the things I would need money for is Representative Huntley's provision that he supported that the governor was carrying, and that was after a meeting I had with Representative Huntley. And I actually met with all the fiscal chairs before I asked for my target. And I asked them what kind of tax provisions they might need. Representative Huntley expressed that the House Health and Human Services side was in strong agreement with the governor in this program. in requesting my target, I asked for money because I did not want the health folks to carry tax provisions in the health bill. So we intentionally decided that Section 125 that we're in agreement with the governor on should be carried in the tax conference committee.
Yes. Yeah. Madam Chair, so then we accounted for it. You know, we're in a bit of a new ballgame now, Madam Chair, when we get new targets for the tax committee. But that's a discussion that should be held then. But I mean, I guess what I'm seeing is that it's not inappropriately from the House position here because we moved that money over when we're setting the target.
How many other of these provisions in the other budget bills do you have as we get through this spreadsheet? Where you let other chairs spend the tax target?
I didn't let them. I agreed with them. Senator Bach, most folks I disagreed with, and you know who one of the biggest troublemakers was Representative Junkie. He wanted to carry all kinds of stuff in the ag bill that were tax bills. All kinds of stuff. Dairy credits and farmsies and all that stuff. So I actually tried to talk to all the chairs, and I don't know, maybe we're a little more collaborative in the House, but I made a point of meeting with fiscal chairs to understand their needs in the tax bill. And so there aren't many. Education we were working, you know, we have a lot of that, you guys do too, and trying to figure that out, and then we ultimately moved it over to the K-12 bill. We debated where those levies should go for a while, but I don't think there's many in here. So I think Representative Carlson's point is well taken, that once we really get a target, it's going to help us understand where this is all getting carried.
Madam Chair, I don't see any hope of the tax committee getting a target in the near future until we find out how many of these budget bills are spending money in this bill. I mean, I don't know, is higher ed spending money in this bill? I mean, those, public finance, I mean, I don't know. Health and Human Services, obviously, their conference committee report proposed to spend money in the tax bill. Until we find out what's in those final bills and they're signed by the governor, we don't have a clue how much money this committee needs. There may be tens of millions of dollars being spent in budget divisions that the tax committee ultimately is going to have to account for. Because the problem becomes, you know, state government can function without a tax bill. We can easily, we don't need a tax bill, and there's been years we haven't had one. We can go home on the 21st, and I mean, I'm not going to hold all summer long if we never come to a resolve on a tax bill or if the governor vetoes a tax bill. But if we're carrying a bunch of money in this bill to pay for budget divisions, that's a bit problematic when this bill's never enacted into law. So I think we need to be just a little bit careful about that.
Senator Bach, you don't have any provisions that aren't for other divisions?
I guess we're going to find out when we go through, but I mean, that's my word of caution, you know, to everybody, because we need to all be cognizant of that.
Representative Carlson.
We watched that on the House side very closely as they were going through, so the way we were accounting for it was that we covered the costs if something did appear here. I think you're probably talking about the biggest one. I don't recall if there are any other ones that are here. I guess it's been a few weeks now, months, since we set those targets. Representative Lincheski and I were quite involved with others. We went through and we set them, but we did. If it was something carried in this bill or as we were dealing with the various finance bills as well, we tried to account for them so that we were accountable in one target or the other. But we'll have to resolve those issues because we just did it differently in the two bodies.
I mean, that's my concern. It's not beyond the realm of possibility that this could happen that way. And we're spending money outside of current law right now when we propose this.
Senator, that's true, but that's the same as, you know, any of the credits we just went through.
But they're being carried in this bill.
Right.
So if this bill doesn't become law, those credits don't become law. But when somebody else carries credits in their bill and then doesn't pay for them, it depends on another bill to be passed into law. And the other bill doesn't get passed, and then there's a problem. I don't know, maybe our fiscal analyst can tell me if I'm just thinking of this wrong, but
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, the as I stated earlier, the Health and Human Services Conference Committee report did include an appropriation for the Minnesota Health Insurance Exchange, which and the Section 125 premium plans. That conference committee bill did go through, and the appropriation was in that bill. The revenue loss was assumed to be carried in the tax bill, and that bill has been vetoed. And so that I do not know what the status is of that appropriation anymore. And so this is kind of in limbo.
I just want to raise it that I think there's...
Well, and that's it. You know, and we are going to have to match up. Representative Carlson, I think, has pointed that out. We thought the flip side was much more dangerous to say, look, if you want to do a dairy credit, you can carry it in your bill, and the tax committee doesn't have to make that call. We thought those were tax bills, and so we helped. Did you let, by the way, Senator Bach, Farm Z didn't leave you, did it? I had heard that Ag carried Farm Z in the Senate, did it? Nope. Never made it?
Never made the cut.
But we're trying to, you know, we had folks who were saying, well, if we can buy that credit, Health and Human would be an example. We could buy Senator Bach's home care credit. Can we do it? And I said, no. It's a tax bill. So that actually was one of the policy chair in Health and Human asked if they could come up with the money for actually your bill, the home care credit. Could they carry it in their bill? And I said, no, it was a tax bill. So, I mean, it kind of works both ways, and I think each body made their own call on that, and we will have to match them up. Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you. But, Madam Chair, the dairy investment credit language is in our bill.
Yeah.
And the language for this Section 125 plan, which I don't know what it is, isn't.
All right, we could move it here.
You know, maybe because, you know, you've got a House position and a Senate position, and what if we couldn't resolve that? And that had become law.
Yeah, I hear you, Senator Skoyne. We could move the policy here. It would be a way. It has been vetoed, so I guess the governor doesn't want it. It was his proposal, and the House was in agreement, and he's vetoed it. So that one might have solved itself. But
for now,
if it comes back, we're going to have to think that through. But we could have had Representative Huntley give us the Health and Human Service language in the tax bill.
And then we would decide if we're going to carry it or not, depending on what our target is.
They had a lot of their Health and Human coverage based on that Section 125 being part of it, but the governor's vetoed it, so.
I mean, I think it's probably a pretty good policy. I just think if they're going to carry it in their bill, they should be willing to pay for it.
See, I didn't want them to carry it in their bill.
I tend to agree with you.
Okay, and we'll probably find some more as we go on one side or the other. But Ms. Templin, what line were we on?
On page 2 of the spreadsheet, moving down to the individual income and corporate franchise tax section on line 47 is the dairy investment credit. The House in fiscal 08-09 spends $9.975 million and $10.175 million in the tails. This dairy investment credit is similar to the governor's provision, except it's slightly more expansive. It includes more qualifying expenditures, such as pasture development and on-farm processing and refrigerated truck delivery.
And the Senate does not have a similar provision.
Okay.
Moving down to line 48, the Senate has a provision on income tax income tax credits for investments in qualified business ventures, and these ventures included biotech, medical, manufacturing, and egg processing, and that was for a total of $2 million in 08-09.
The House has a somewhat similar provision that you will see later on in this spreadsheet.
Ms. Templin, if I can, just so the Senate knows what we're saying here, what we're doing here. We covered this. This was the Dabney bill, and we've got it further down in the economic development part of the spreadsheet. So that's also another issue that down the road we're going to have to find a way to match up these provisions that are in different parts of the spreadsheet to look at the different costs. And I don't know if ours is more or less expensive, honestly, but because yours is structured as a credit and ours isn't, it's appearing differently. Thank you.
On line 49 of the spreadsheet, Madam Chair, in fiscal 08-09, the House has the historic rehabilitation credit. The cost is $7.7 million, and in the tails is $8.3
million. The House does not have a similar, or this, I'm sorry, the Senate does not have a similar provision. And then moving down to line 53, we move into the corporate franchise tax. And on that line, you see the Senate's position on foreign operating corporations. The revenue raised with the Senate language is $244 million in 08-09 and $194 million in 10 and 11.
On line 54 of the spreadsheet, the House has a similar provision. The FOCs are repealed, the foreign royalty subtraction is eliminated, and it allows a worldwide unitary option. This provision raises $297 million in fiscal 08-09 and $235 million in 10 and 11.
And proceeding down the spreadsheet on line 57, the House accelerates the transit. I'm sorry. The Senate accelerates the transition to the single sales factor so that we would be phased into 100% sales in 2011. The costs for this provision is $20.3 million in 08-09 and $47 million in 10 and 11.
On line 58 of the spreadsheet, the House has a similar provision. Starting in tax year 08, the single sales factor is accelerated to 82%, and the cost in 08-09 is $15.1 million. On line 59, the House also accelerates to 100% single sales factor, and the cost is $77.8 million, and in the tails, it's $82 million.
And on line 60, both the House and the Senate have an adjustment line. It's the interaction between the FOC and the accelerated phase-in formula. And on the Senate side, the cost is $2.6 million in 08-09 and $6.6 million in 10 and 11.
The House, the cost for the House in fiscal 08-09 is $15.9 million and $13.7 million in 10 and 11.
Excuse me, Senator Bach, can I ask you, has Ameriprise discussed that line with you yet?
Next one.
They have not. They need to get moving. That was the Ameriprise situation that, see, it appeared to us that the Senate had not heard about that at all. Representative Dabney's bill.
Oh, yes,
have you, has anyone had time to speak with you on that at all?
Madam Chair, we heard that in committee yesterday.
You did, okay.
Mm-hmm. Has that bill.
Okay. So people are more familiar with it now.
We're still a little uncomfortable with the fiscal note on it. Still don't know if we know for sure what it is.
And excuse me, may I ask?
Revenue's struggling with
Dr. Wilson,
to put a number on it.
All right, how are we doing on that revenue estimate?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the.
Oh, it is the final.
The new spreadsheet has new numbers on it, and these are essentially final numbers. We obviously are open to additional information from the industry if they still want to talk to us, but otherwise these are the final numbers.
Okay. Madam Chair, line 61 of the spreadsheet addresses the issue you just raised,
yep.
The provision on the apportionment of income earned by mutual funds service providers, that is the Ameriprise issue. We received a preliminary estimate from the Department of Revenue 2 days ago, and we have a new estimate for the House of a cost of $2.6 million in fiscal 08-09 and $4.3 million in 10 and 11.
And, Madam Chair, as Senator Bach just mentioned, we heard this yesterday in the Tax Committee, and when we heard it, we were looking at the revenue estimate that was the same that is represented on the House line at this moment, right now.
Okay. Madam Chair, I'm still not, I mean, I think it may be okay policy, but I remain a little concerned that the bill didn't get a number in the Senate until today.
Oh, okay.
I think even if it's a good idea, it doesn't send the best message to the people sitting in the audience that can introduce a bill a week and a half after the conference committee is meeting and somehow end up with it included in the conference committee report. I'm a little concerned about the message that sends for next session.
And Senator Buck, so that might have been a concern in the Senate. The House, we actually did hear it, and we hadn't put our omnibus bill together yet, but I will only guess that what might have prompted Ameriprise actually to talk to me was a couple of things. That the House was going to have a FOC provision that was maybe a little bit more of a surprise to some of the businesses in Minnesota than the Senate. And then also that we were going to do single sales to 100%. So I think that might have gotten a lot of corporate Minnesota thinking about how these interactions were going to play out, because while some of our Minnesota companies are concerned about both the Senate FOC provisions and the House FOC provisions, I think many of those same companies will benefit by accelerating the phase in of single sales. And I think they themselves and their tax staffs are trying to figure out how they're going to be affected with a Senate FOC bill and an acceleration to, what do you have, 82%? No.
They're the same as the governors. Madam Chair, they're the same as the governors.
And then how will they be affected under the House FOC with 100% phase-in? And I think they're, if I understand it, they're trying to figure out really, you know, who do they do better under, the House or Senate? And I think different companies have different answers, and they're all just trying to figure it out. So I'm just going to guess that Ameriprise was going through some of those same calculations. I'm not going to defend the lateness of them bringing it to us, but we were not done with our bill. So
we
need to keep talking to them.
The bill got introduced in the Senate after both bills had passed the floor and the conference committee had already met for a week and a half. It seems like a late arrival. And, I mean, it doesn't send a very good message about the process. But, and I'm not saying it's bad policy, but it's a dangerous precedent for me to set. But it will depend on how much money we have anyway. So,
right.
Yeah. But I'm not disagreeing that it might not be good policy.
And I think Representative Dabney just stepped out, so I think that's unfortunate. This discussion is happening without Representative Dabney. I don't know if anyone knows where he went, but this is his bill. And Senator Moore, they're both not here. Okay, so what do they do?
Pretty,
they ran in
easy
hit.
For us to move on.
Okay, let's take it. Does someone want to adopt something here while they're both
done? You need to drop something on the floor.
Okay, thank you.
Line 62 of the spreadsheet is the repealing, a repealer adjustment for pollution control facilities. The House has a cost of $30,000 in 08-09, and in the tails, this raises $30,000.
And the Senate has the same position.
Moving on to page 3 of the spreadsheet, at the top of the sheet, line 69, in estate taxes, the House has a provision that excludes certain farm and small business property. The cost for this provision is $3.7 million in 08-09 and $4.7 million in 10 and 11.
The Senate does not have a similar provision.
On line 70, the House has a provision for the taxation of gifts made within 3 years of death. This raises $7.6 million in 08-09 and $9.6 million in 10 and 11.
And the Senate does not have a similar provision. Moving down to sales and use tax on line 75 to line 89, the Senate shows a series of numbers that relate to reducing the June accelerated payments. Taxpayers are required to pay a portion of their estimated June liability 2 days before June 30th. This is one of the shifts that was made several years ago. The Senate has put a significant amount of resources into buying back the shift. So what I would do, the lines break out every type of tax, from sales to cigarette excise to tobacco to alcohol. Where I would point you
83.
at is line 83, which is the net effect to the general fund, which is $158.6 million in 08-09 and $9.2 million in 10 and 11.
Okay. The House does not have a similar provision. Lines 91 through 93 pertain to the SSTA, and the House has both the House and Senate carry costs related to those provisions. Maybe we can proceed to line 94, if that's okay, Madam Chair. Line 94 is the provision where the Minnesota State Agricultural Society retains sales tax collected on state fair admissions. This provision costs $2.4 million in 08-09 and $2.4 million in 10 and 11.
The Senate has the same provision.
Line 95 of this spreadsheet, Madam Chair, I just want to bring your attention to the motor vehicle leases sales to transportation. This was a governor's provision. And just to kind of piggyback on the discussion earlier, this motor vehicle lease provision was included in the transportation bill. I understand, though, that the costs are being carried in that bill. Line 99 of the spreadsheet.
Members, line 99 of the spreadsheet, as we move into sales tax exemptions, the Senate provides an upfront exemption for capital equipment. Currently, people who purchase capital equipment have to file a refund to get the exemption. This provides them with an exemption upfront, and the costs are $121.1 million in 08-09 and $30 million in 10 and 11.
Lines 100 and 101 of the spreadsheet are governor's provisions that are not in either the House or the Senate, so I will proceed to line 102. The House has a provision for the capital equipment exemption for the agricultural feed processing facility. This is the FAMO feed in the city of Freeport. The cost of this provision is $70,000 in 08-09, and this is a one-time appropriation.
We don't have a similar provision for that. Oh, I'm sorry. We don't. The Senate does not have a similar provision for the last item.
Line 103 of the spreadsheet pertains to an exemption for public safety radio communication. This extends it to Itasca County. The cost in 08-09 is $370,000, and in 10 and 11, the costs are negligible.
And the Senate has the same provision. And on line 104, the Senate provides an exemption for the sales tax on vending machine milk and water sales in schools. The cost is $180,000 in 8 and 9 and $195,000 in 10 and 11.
The House does not have a similar provision. Line 105 of the spreadsheet, this is an exemption for construction materials for low-income housing. The cost in 08-09 is $1.32 million, and in 10 and 11, the cost is $1,460,000.
The Senate does not have a similar provision. On line 106, the Senate provides an exemption for construction materials only for Thompson West with job creation criteria, where this would be operated as a refund once they have demonstrated certain job retention criteria. Because of the way the language is structured, it does not show any costs in 08-09 or in 10 and 11, but the costs would come in the next biennium.
Senator Bach.
We should stop for a second.
We should. Just to smile about that provision. What would it cost if you didn't push it out?
The same as the governor.
I think the governor's...
$9 million or something like that.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, line 107 is the governor's provision, so you can see what the costs would be.
Madam Chair,
Dr. Wilson,
the position in the provision of the Senate bill is actually a little narrower than the governor's was. So it's $4.34 million is the number of dollars involved in the rebate. And the
in the
$3 million. It's in 12 and after, but that's the total dollars of sales tax.
In two bienniums from now. So it's smaller.
A lot of money.
In 2012. But that's right. Senator Bach, that's creative.
Yeah. Madam Chair, that's not creative. That's dang good policy.
It's a little bit like Representative Rukavina's film board, how we fund that, somewhat in that category.
Chair, Representative Markward, it is nothing like that.
But we could take Representative Rukavina's thing and say when they create so many jobs in 2012. I do like your accountability on the job part, though. That's a good thing.
Okay.
We should maybe do that for all kinds of things.
Somebody might say it was the Bach provision.
You know, when you guys were out on the lawn and was the hope of, was it 10,000 jobs? That could be the Bach provision.
Did I make TV?
I don't know.
All back.
You did?
Was I eating a bratwurst or?
No, you were talking.
How could we call that? Maybe they shouldn't call it the Mall of America Phase 2. Maybe they should call it Bachland. Something like that. I don't know. What do you think?
Did I see just a little crack that we might build it?
Oh, no. Crack like, you know,
Just a little crack. A glimmer of hope.
Well, there is a chance. I think it would work well in St. Louis County. And you know what? All you have to do is give them tens of millions of dollars of your local property taxpayers' money, and then you can have it. We'll help them find a way. In fact, Fergus has a castle that could get a regional treatment facility.
I thought we were putting Thompson West there.
Oh, Thompson West. Okay, I'm getting confused. Anyway, I apologize. Okay.
Line 108 of the spreadsheet, Madam Chair. This is the exemption for BioBusiness Center in Rochester. The house provision includes the parking ramp and the building. The cost in 08-09 is $1 million.
And the Senate language limited the exemption to construction materials only and only for the business center, not for the parking ramp. The Senate estimate is $635,000 in
08-09. Line 109 of the spreadsheet, this is an exemption for materials, supplies, equipment for the bioscience research facility in Austin. This provision costs $320,000 in 08-09. With no cost in the tails.
The Senate does not have a similar provision. The Senate on line 110 provides an exemption for logging tires under the ag sales exemptions at $65,000 in 08-09 and $68,000 in 10 and 11.
Excuse me. Oh, I apologize. The tires. To get off on skidder tires.
You know what they are now.
I do. But Ms. Templin, I thought we did these tires.
Madam Chair, on line 112 of the spreadsheet, the costs are included with the grain bins.
I see. Okay, thank you. I apologize.
We did a broader tire exemption.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, members, on line 111, the Senate provides an exemption for grain bins and fencing for livestock at $4.8 million in 08-09 and $5 million in 10 and 11.
Line 112 of the spreadsheet, the House has a similar provision. There is an exemption for grain bins, drying systems, and tires for farm machinery and logging equipment. The combined cost of those exemptions is $4.6 million in 08-09 and $4.8 million in 10 and 11.
And Madam Chair, on line 13, the Senate provides a sales tax refund for construction materials for the Thief River Falls Arena at $350,000 in 08-09.
The House does not have a similar provision.
On line 114, the Senate provides a commuter rail exemption for the North Star, $7.7 million in 08-09.
The House has a similar provision on line 115 of the spreadsheet. The House's exemption is limited to commuter rail cars and engines. The cost in 08-09 is $3.6 million, and in 10 and 11, there are no costs. Line 117 of the spreadsheet is the charitable organizations holding a Minnesota vehicle dealer license exemption, and the cost in 08-09 is negligible, and a cost to the motor vehicle sales tax, from motor vehicle sales tax funds is $16,000.
The Senate does not have a similar provision.
Line 118 of the spreadsheet, there is an exemption for fire department tangible personal property used in emergencies. The cost for the House, the cost in the House bill, it was $595,000 and $665,000 in fiscal 10 and 11.
And the Senate does not have a similar provision. However, on line 119, we provide an exemption from the motor vehicle sales tax for emergency response vehicles and repair parts, and the cost for that is negligible in all years.
Moving on to pages 4 and 5, the House on lines 124 through line 136 has exemptions for water and wastewater facilities, and this exemption is at 50% with the exception of line 129. The exemption is at 100%. The cost for these exemptions from sales tax for wastewater and water treatment facilities on line 138 is $2.721 million in 08-09 and $433 million in 10 and 11.
And on line 31 is the only provision that is carried in this area by the Senate, and that is for, it is a refund for the Minnetonka Water Treatment Plant at $140,000.
Line 142 of the spreadsheet, moving on to tobacco taxes. This is moist snuff excise tax change to a weight-based tax. This provision raises in 08-09 $8.9 million, and in 10 and 11 it raises $9.7 million.
And the Senate does not have a similar provision.
On line 143 of the spreadsheet, this provision raises a similar amount in the health impact fee. And on line 144 of the spreadsheet and line 145 of the spreadsheet, this shows the amount of revenue raised from indexing the moist snuff excise tax and fee. And this raises $400,000 in 08-09 and $2.8 million in 10 and 11.
And the Senate does not have a similar provision.
Moving on to gambling taxes on line 152 of the spreadsheet, the House has a provision that reduces the gambling tax rates by 7% temporarily, and this has a cost of $6.29 million in 08-09 and $3.38 million in 10 and 11.
And the Senate does not have a similar provision. On lines 156 through 159 is the Senate's position on the state property levy. The state freezes the levy rates at 2004 rates, which was 54.1099%. We remove the non-commercial and commercial seasonal recreation property from the state levy, and we include property utility electric generating property in the levy. These changes net out on line 158 to $221.9 million in 08-09 and to $466.7 million in 10 and 11.
The House does not have a similar provision.
Think big.
Line 161 of the spreadsheet in the other tax and non-tax revenue changes. We should proceed to line 161 of the spreadsheet is a governor's provision that extends the tax benefits for jobs, and that was not included in either the House or the Senate omnibus bills.
And on line 162 is the Senate's position to end Job Z benefits as of May 1st of this year, and it produces a savings of 3.85 in 08-09 and 9.4 in 10 and 11.
The House does not have a similar provision. And on line 163 of this spreadsheet, the House funds the farms program, and this has a small cost in 08-09 of $10,000, and in 10 and 11, there is a cost of $65,000.
And the Senate does not have a similar provision. On line 164 is the Senate's position on the Fergus Falls tax-free Renaissance zones. The tax exemptions provided are for business corporate franchise taxes only, for a total of $35,010 and $11,000.
Madam Chair, I should also bring to your attention on the Fergus Falls tax-free Renaissance zones that there is a historic credit in that provision that has unknown costs. Line 165 of the spreadsheet.
Ms. Templin?
Yes.
Can you repeat that?
On the Fergus Falls tax-free Renaissance zones, within the language in the Senate bill, there is a historic credit, and the revenue estimate does not have it says unknown.
Pretty easy credit to do, Madam Chair.
Just get a revenue estimate that says unknown. That must be what happened. Since nobody knew. Mr. Manson?
Madam Chair,
Dr. Wilson?
Madam Chair, the revenue estimate for that is unknown, primarily because when we spoke with the Historical Society about the use of these credits, it's very difficult to use one to change a building, refurbish a building for commercial use, and meet all the other requirements of the historic credit. So the feeling was that while it was possible that this might have some use, it would be very difficult for someone to come in and make the changes in a way that actually qualified them for the historic credit. So I don't think it's all that inappropriate to consider it to be on the spreadsheet, to consider it to be a zero, but there is a possibility that they could use it.
Okay. Thank you.
Line 165 of the spreadsheet is the border city allocations. The House has this provision at a cost of $1.5 million in 08-09 and 10 and 11 at a zero cost.
And the Senate has the same position.
Line 166 of the spreadsheet is the Taylor Falls border city zone provision. This has a cost of $65,000 in fiscal 08-09 for the House and $35,000 in 10 and 11.
And the House or the Senate does not have a similar provision.
And on line 167 of the spreadsheet, the House there has earnings from the budget reserve, and this raises $1.56 million in 08-09 and $3.2 million in 10 and 11.
And on the Senate side, we show $33 million in 08-09 and $70 million in 10 and 11. And the Senate language is slightly different in that the interest earnings on the budget reserve are designated to stay within the budget reserve and not go to the general fund as is typical.
Madam Chair?
Senator Black.
All I can figure is the Senate probably has put our budget reserve in money markets. You probably got it in a piggy bank.
You know, I've heard stories that they print money somewhere around here, and I think I figured out just where it is. It's right here in this line.
And I'm sure I think somebody snookered you a little bit and took it away from you. Somebody spent it somewhere.
Well, we spent our property tax. Really. We'll get to that. That'll be in a different line. Transition aid. See it.
Senate's concerned about the future of the economy, so we salted our nickels away in the reserve. We have 4-year terms. We have to worry about the next budget biennium. It won't be a new group of senators. It's going to be the same group sitting around this table trying to do the 10 and 11 budget, and we're trying to make sure we don't create a problem, because we won't be able to sit with conferees 2 years from now here and say, oh, well, we didn't create this problem.
It won't be. Both of these plans pay for everything they're doing. That's what's new.
We do think that putting money in the reserve is a good idea.
We're hopeful it will be the same group on this side to take.
Well, I'm sure you'd love to concur. You could. We might.
We might.
The governor might come in and decide that, boy, this economy is slowing down. Or maybe we need to squirrel a few more nickels away.
Line 168 of the spreadsheet, this provision pertains to the Revenue Department's technical bill. There are penalty provisions, some of which are new and some of which are changed. That raise for the House $60,000 in 08-09 and $55,000 in 10 and 11.
The Senate has the same position.
On line 169 of the spreadsheet, the House has, this is from the Special Revenue Fund, a provision that allows a 10-cent per ticket on professional men's hockey to support the Hockey Hall of Fame. This raises $111,000 in 08-09 and $148,000 in 10 and 11.
The Senate does not have this provision.
Line 170 of the spreadsheet, there is a homestead credit state refund transition reserve. In 10 and 11, there is $84.295 million. And
the Senate does not have this position.
And lines 172, 171 and 172 pertain to the ATV unrefunded gas tax. This is where the rate is changed from 1.5% to 0.27% of 1%. And this redistributes revenue between the Natural Resources Fund and the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund.
And the Senate does not have this provision.
And to conclude, on line 173 for General Fund, to conclude, moving on to line 180, for the House, there are revenue changes of $595 million in 08-09, and in 10 and 11, revenue changes of $653 million.
And on the Senate side, for 08-09, there are revenue changes of $131.3 million, and in 10 and 11, of $570 million. Proceeding down to tax expenditures, and I want to draw your attention to a change in how we're dealing with the numbers on the tax expenditure side of the spreadsheet, in that now the negative numbers will represent expenditure reductions or budget savings, and the positive numbers will represent expenditure increases. So, and Ms. Schill has...
I also have a housekeeping item. For members in the House, the spreadsheet reflects only the decisions items that make changes in the anticipated spending in the February 07 forecast. When the conference committee spending decisions are finalized, fiscal staff will merge those decisions with the forecasted spending to create a final spreadsheet document. For House members, the final document is equivalent to the buff-colored sheet that we used for both our presentations in committee and Ways and Means and on the floor. And one other note, the spreadsheet from here on back to page 12 is organized in four different kinds of categories: credits and tax refunds, local aids, property tax changes, and E12 tax provisions, and then another category of other appropriations. We also understand that the committee right now is not interested in going through some of the general sections in which there is no statewide fiscal impact. And so there are 68 changes
that you'll find on pages 10 and 12, or 10 through 12, that we will not go over unless the committee asks for it. And that also includes the local sales and use taxes for 9 cities and 1 county. One other note is that we've grouped together as much as possible the decision items before we go over them. And sometimes there are numerous changes in one decision. For example, the Citizens Property Tax Relief Bill contains several impacts on different lines, like 240 to 244. So we'll kind of clump those together and give you everything together, if that's okay.
Yeah, and I think for clarification, if Senator Bach, if this is okay, then we won't do the governor's ones, we won't do the ones without fiscal impact, and then we don't need to have every minutia of all the interactions of each of these concepts, if that's okay. It's already 9:10, so.
Okay.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll begin on with credits and refunds on line 194. Is the Senate's property or market value credit increased funding at 44.9 million in 08-09 and 84.9 million in 10 and 11. Oh, excuse me, I need to move my ruler down a little more. There is then the property tax refund interaction, so the net change for these items for the Senate is 41.9 million in 08-09 and 79.4 million in 10 and 11.
And the House has no impact here. We had a different program.
Okay, and then the Senate under line 198, we provide a property tax refund increase to homeowners at an increase of 24.4 million in 08-09 and 54.1 million in 10 and 11.
The homestead credit state refund is shown on lines 199 through 202. The homestead credit state refund includes the following. It expands the income threshold for eligible homeowners from $93,000 to $150,000. It changes the taxpayer copay used in determining refunds to a flat 2% of household income, and it increases the maximum refund from $1,740 to $2,500. PTR expenditures totaled $223 million in fiscal 09 and $277 million in 10 and $324 million in fiscal 11. These amounts are offset by the phase-down of the market value credit line found on line 197. And it's important to note that we have a 60% reduction in fiscal 10, or excuse me, an application of 60% in fiscal 10, showing a reduction of $98 million funded at 30% in FY11, a reduction of $163 million. Please note that the new PTR schedule begins in 2009, while the changes to the market value credit begin in fiscal 10. This one-year timing mismatch allows taxpayers and local governments to transition to the new program, but it's important for you to know that this provision makes it more expensive to implement. To migrate to the new program, the Homestead Credit State Refund Transition Reserve was created, and Ms. Templin identified that earlier, and it's also reflected on page 7. Full transition to the Homestead Credit State Refund Program will be finished at the end of 2011. Line 201 reflects the changes to the renter's property tax also associated with this at $7.7 million in 09. Going on to line 203, you'll find the $90,000 cost for changes to the senior property tax deferral program, which includes not only the removal of the marriage penalty for couples, but it also has an increase in the maximum income to $75,000 and a reduction of interest to zero.
The Senate does not have a similar position. On line 204 is the Senate's position on...
Madam Chair, on line 203, I see it says remove marriage penalty for couples. I thought that that was taken care of last year.
No.
No?
Is this...
Discussed. You're thinking of the income tax?
Is this where the one, just one has to be?
It's 165, 162.
Within the income tax, this is different. This is current law, you have to have two people, you both have to be over 65, and we're saying only one. So if you're 65 and your spouse is 62 or whatever.
I think the other spouse has to be 62.
Has to be 62 or older.
It's just one of them instead of both of them.
Right, yeah.
Sorry, yeah, we might need a better way to think about that, the marriage penalty, but yes. You're right, we did take care of the other one.
We did.
Yeah. Madam Chair, maybe remove age requirement for a couple rather than marriage penalty might be.
We can make that adjustment if you like.
Line 204.
The Senate's position on the market value farmland credit, which increases the maximum credit at a cost to $9 million in 08-09 and $18.4 million in 10 and 11.
The House had this in Representative Marquardt's bill, 848, but chose not to fund it. If you move down to the next line, we have the other component that was included in 848, which is the farm class rate change for first-tier homesteads from 0.55% to 0.5%. And this is a property tax refund impact.
And the Senate has the same provision.
And please note, this is one of two same provisions through the rest of the sheet. So this is really very good. We're like thinking at least on two items.
Moving on to local aids, on line 209 is the Senate's position on local government aid to cities, where we increase the appropriation by $150 million in 08-09 and $300 million in 10 and 11. And I won't go into the details unless someone has questions on that.
And the House position on increases to local government aid are reflected on lines 209 through 211. You not only see $60 million in each year added beginning in FY09, but you also see the indexing provided at 1%, and then there's a base level adjustment associated with that indexing in fiscal 11. So those three lines you need to add together.
And on line 213 is the Senate's position on county program aid, where we increase the equalization, tax base equalization, and the need aid by $30 million each. And we also index, so the total costs are $60 million in 08-09 and $140.5 million, or six if you round up, in 10 and 11.
Remember how much money you have for
and similar to the local government aid presentation is our county program aid presentation on lines 214 through 217. You'll see the increase in county program aid. If you add lines 214 and 215 together, they add up to $24 million per year. We happen to have the county transition aid made permanent included in that $24 million. And then there is, once again, 1% indexing and a base level adjustment associated with our provision. Moving to line 218.
Let me interrupt.
I'm sorry.
Let me interrupt for a moment here. On line 215, I want to also state that the Senate also provides permanent county transition aid.
Sorry,
go ahead. No, that's okay.
Line 218, through the county program aid program, we've also included a one-time appropriation in fiscal 09 of $250,000 for the Pine County Judicial Center.
And on line 219, the Senate has its county, or its aid to townships, where the Senate provides 40% of what the towns received in 2001 HACA. At $11.8 million in 08-09 and $23.6 million in 10 and 11.
The House provision provides a per capita increase or a provision of aid to townships. And in 08-09, that's $3 million. And there's growth associated with population growth in the figures for fiscal 10 and 11. This is not indexing.
On line 220 is a calculation which is the property tax refund interactions with all of the preceding changes in local government aid. For the Senate, this is a savings of 4.57 in 08-09 and 9.14 million in 10 and 11.
And to match up with how the Senate provided this information to its members, we grouped ours. We had this amount reflected in three different lines, but we came together so we would have like items together. The interaction impact for LGA, CPA, and aid to towns on the House side is $1.793 million in 09, and then $3.5 million or so in FY 10 and 11.
On line 222, the Senate provides a permanent increase in payments to local governments in Manoman County of $1.2 million in both biennium.
The House had a little different take on this. Instead of providing the $600,000 that the Senate provided, the House instead did a one-time appropriation of $250,000 in fiscal 09 and have other language that will require adjustment of the tax base used in calculating the school district levies. So it will be picked up in aid instead of through a direct appropriation.
Also, Madam Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
There's also in the tax base portion of the county program aid, that reduction is also noted, so Manoman County would receive more aid, just like they were to lose that property tax base.
And that, who did that? How does that work? And how did we do that?
So that should help their aides in those areas.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bach.
Representative Marquardt. I wonder if the Senate prevails here in this provision, if we were to prevail, not saying we will. I wonder if when Representative Eakin puts out his legislative report, if he's going to mention how Manoman County got an extra $1.2 million a biennium, $600,000 a year. I wonder if people say what a good job his senator did.
Senator Bach, you should say what a good job the House has done. Because Senator Scoy knows this. The House came out swinging for Representative Eakin last year.
Both did.
Pardon?
Both the Senate and the House.
Yes, you did, but Senator Pogemiller needed some convincing, and actually Representative Abrams and House conferees who are working with Senator Scoy to get it done. So Representative Eakin knows the House is his friend as well.
Madam Chair, the reason we haven't gone permanent on that is because we would still like to see if they could work out an agreement with the tribe. And we feel that if we were to make it permanent, then you reduce the incentive for the two groups to work together. So we're kind of going on a year-by-year basis right now, and that was the intent of that.
Senator Scoy.
Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt, we did include language that if they have worked out an agreement, it would be subtracted.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Madam Chair, this is a perfect example of a rural House and Senate member, in order to make sure that they cover the needs of their district, they spread themselves around on different committees at the legislature. And Senator Scoy's done a fine job for Manoman County here, and I know Representative Eakin has done a fine job on a number of issues for rural Minnesota in the environment area.
And here.
So they're getting covering both bases, and when you're from rural areas, that's what you need to do, and they're doing a good job of it.
Senator Bach, what do you do if you represent the suburbs? How do you get a provision in a tax bill?
I
never seem to have any lines.
Madam Chair, I don't know. Suburbs, I don't know. I don't know what their needs are. Maybe they don't have any needs.
Well, I know you got one for one suburb.
Yeah, I thought there was.
I think you've got one there.
trying to give the city what they want.
A property tax increase. That's what it is.
Trying to get the mayor and the unanimous vote of the city council. Just trying to accommodate, you know, us rural people. We're sensitive to our local governments.
Okay.
You may have heard me on the floor today talk about state-local fiscal relationship, how we have to restore that relationship between state and local units of government.
Senator Bach?
I think when local units of government come to us and say, would you please do this for us?
Yes, and Senator...
We need to pay attention.
I listened to some of that debate. I thought... I didn't hear it all, but Representative Marquardt and I were trying to listen to these provisions on towing places in Minneapolis on our floor and listen to you at the same time. It was difficult.
Yeah.
And then Senator Representative Marquardt's
my computer
crashed.
Or something.
So he had to listen in Representative Hortman's computer to keep listening to you.
Yes.
And you know what? We were very confused by Senator Day's speech.
So were we.
We just kept saying, what is he talking about? Did anyone clarify what was in your... I think he had a speech ready for a different bill. What was going on there? Seriously, we want to know. Those of us... And Representative Dill, he was getting all ready for tomorrow, too. And he was all plugged in. He had all his paper because he's getting ready to try to explain what's happening to him. And he, too, was wondering what Senator Day was saying. And we were all befuddled, those of us who were listening to the Senate debate a tax bill today. What was going on over there? Can you tell us?
Madam Chair, Senator Day very eloquently made the point that the state is underfunding our schools. He indicated very clearly that he listed a number of cities and the amount of state aid they get to schools, and they were mostly in the 70-some percent range. And I would argue that that's not good enough, that, you know, that I think I made that statement on the Senate floor that funding for public education is a state responsibility. It's in the Constitution. That
very eloquently, you read the Constitution. I watched you, book in hand.
Representative Dill came by my office later. He was mimicking me a bit. I think his words were, wow, he says, you look like Abraham Lincoln reciting the Constitution on the Senate floor. He said. So I'm going to be watching him closely tomorrow.
Well, Senator Bach, you did a great job in what Representative Dill missed, and I think Representative Marquardt, because he was struggling with his computer there, missed that you and your wife had gone and had breakfast on Payne Avenue, and there were two waitresses and a cook there, and I thought that was a very compelling argument.
I got scolded by the president for that.
You did? For saying that people who don't make a lot of money work hard, too? What was wrong with that?
Madam Chair, I said they work damn hard.
I miss that. In the House, it just goes right over our heads. You say that all the time.
The Senate president was very quick to remind me that that wasn't appropriate conduct on the Senate floor.
I heard Senator Russ say something to you, and I turned to...
I didn't remember it.
And I said, what'd he say? So that tells you the House doesn't even notice that stuff. I was trying to figure out what that was about. But in all seriousness, I have no disrespect to Senator Day. I honestly... thought he didn't know what was in he was talking about LGA, wasn't he, and county aid and school levy. I was kind of missing what was going on there.
Madam Chair, much of the afternoon, the black helicopters were circling the rotunda.
I really like Senator Day, so I hope he's not offended, but I honestly was confused, and so was Representative Marquardt, and we figured we missed something, and you could tell us what happened.
Didn't miss anything.
I thought you'd put an amendment on there or something.
I think the president of the Senate should watch, I think it's the 1939 movie Gone with the Wind. Frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a damn.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a major thing for a movie at the time, but that's, you know, over a half century ago.
Well, the Senate probably hasn't caught up yet. But I actually contemplated the use of that word before I used it. And those comments I felt very passionate about. Because I thought Senator Ortman's comments did not reflect any of the members of the Senate. And I didn't want the public watching on television somehow to assume that the only people that work hard are people that make $500,000. So I felt that needed a retort.
Senator Bach, I think you were very classy in saying that you knew she didn't mean to say that
either.
That's
I think
we all know that everybody works hard.
Sometimes in the excitement of debate on the floor, things get said, and I think when members hear that, it's good to remind each other. And Senator Ortman did come to me later during the session and thank me for making that correction. He said, please do not be mad at me. And I said, Senator Ortman, I would never be mad at you.
And we like, I like Senator Ortman a lot. And Senator Day, but I was a little confused, and I missed all of it, but I saw most of it. I was busy trying to help represent Marquardt, who was, you know, missing half the show. It was an interesting day.
Madam Chair, how much do you like Senator Day?
I like him a lot. He's got a bad favorable TIF provision in your bill, but you know what, though? I think he said he wanted a Mall of America. Or his community would love one. I think maybe you should put it in Owatonna.
Madam Chair, Representative Fritz.
Yes.
Really would like that fairball TIF provision. She came to see me about it.
Today?
Yesterday.
Oh.
Twice. I just want you to be aware that many of your members are coming to me.
There might be
we
some truth
to that. We appreciate your work.
And the House tax chair is mean.
Us. None of them have said you're mean.
Cheap.
Here. Not me.
And what does she say?
Cheap.
Cheap?
Cheap here.
Okay, sorry about the aside there. We're almost through the spreadsheet, though.
Yeah.
We're almost through it. But I appreciated your words today. It's very good.
Madam Chair, members, on line 224 is a provision that is carried in both the House and the Senate to increase the PILT payments for land utilization project lands within wildlife management areas at a cost to $62,000 in 08-09 and $129,000 in 10 and 11.
And guess what? The House is exactly the same.
Madam Chair, I don't understand when this bill was passed before Easter, you managed to land this same provision in your bill. Oversight? Or?
You wanted to make sure it wasn't there?
I'm just wondering. Doesn't seem like we have very many.
And I, line and are you talking about?
Representative Anzels and Senator Saxog,
line
224.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got the same thing.
Just curious how it happened.
Senator Anzels doing a great job.
Representative Anzels is a good friend of mine.
Is he?
Yes, he is.
I met his daughter. She was here, and seems like he's done a good job there, too.
His wife, who has now passed away, worked for the Senate, I believe.
Pat
Piper's
secretary.
Yeah.
Counsel?
Young for that.
Pat Piper. Senator Piper's secretary for a number of years, I believe.
Mm-hmm. How many years ago was that? She passed.
Five, seven.
He and I spoke about this on the floor. I had a bill related to cancer yesterday, and he shared. And he returns home frequently to water her plants.
Oh, that's sad.
Mm.
Oh, that.
Mm. Very hard.
Mm.
That's tough.
Got two daughters, 20-ish probably, that have been very affected by it also.
Yeah.
Line 225 is the second time Taylor's Falls shows up on the spreadsheet. The first time was line 166 with the border city provision. This line is, and it's in both the Senate and House bills, we're increasing LGA by $30,000.
And on the Senate side, we make this a permanent increase. It is included in the LGA adjustments made at the top of this section. And in line 226, the Senate transfers to the Education Improvement Account $78 million in 08-09 and $166.7 million in 10 and 11. And this is one of the efforts to buy down the general education levy.
The House has a different provision on this. We don't have anything in this budget like this.
Moving on to the property tax section, the first two items And actually, they comprise four lines, I believe, on this section are actually companion bills, but as they went through committee, they were structured a little bit differently. So the Senate position is on lines 231 and 232, where the Senate provides an exemption from property taxes for disabled veterans who are have 100% disability, service-related disability. The net effect of this is $1.77 million in 08-09 and $3.82 million in 10 and 11.
On lines 233 and 234 is the House outcome of the disabled veteran provisions. This is a combination. I see that Representative Rukavina's name is here, but it was also Representative Eastland and I believe Representative Ruth as well. We ended up coming to conclusion of having a property tax exclusion. The Senate has an exemption, the House has an exclusion, and it's based on the level of service-connected disability, 50% or more. And these lines together represent a cost savings of approximately $5.3 million per year. The House filed has a three-tiered exclusion that correlates to the veteran's level of disability.
And on line 235 is a Senate provision on split-class properties, properties that are homestead and some other class, typically commercial, where the homestead class is allowed to borrow, or the homestead portion of the property is allowed to borrow up to $76,000 for the purposes of valuation. The revenue estimate on this provision is unknown.
And the House does not have a similar provision. Line 236 is the reducing the threshold for the Class 4D low-income housing that we adopted earlier this evening. And you adopted the House version, which is at the threshold of 20%. That reflects a cost of $105,000 per year.
And I will move down to lines 237 and 238. It was a provision to use adjusted net tax capacity and remove limited market value from the calculation of sales ratios for school debt service equalization aid. This directly affects the maximum effort levy districts, but it also will affect how the school debt service equalization aid is calculated for every school district. The first line is an increase in cost of $1.4 million in 08-09, and then the line below that is a property tax interaction figure of $100,000. In 10 and 11, it's $2.2 million with a property tax interaction of $150,000.
And the House has no similar provision.
Madam Chair?
I think this one, though, we did in the K-12.
Yeah, we also dealt with that maximum effort loan area, but it's in the K-12 bill. Yeah.
So you carried spending for health and human services, and then when you were able to raise some money with a provision, you also gave that money away to a different committee and didn't carry the
school
money
levies.
Raised either.
School levies at home.
Oh.
Yeah, we are. We're very generous.
Madam Chair.
And cheap, though, too.
All at once.
Senator Squire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to the school levies, I've had some discussions with Representative Saylor, and we had a levy transfer Senate. Bill, and it is in the House, and they said that they weren't doing any levy transfers in the K-12 bill that was in your property tax area.
Madam
and I don't see any of that here. We haven't talked about it at all, and I'm wondering where that went, because we traditionally do some of these transfers.
Madam Chair, would that be the same as a fund transfer?
Fund transfer.
Yeah, I do know that it was the philosophy of Chair Greiling this year not to do fund transfers. I don't think she did any fund transfers, because I had one myself for Campbell Tinton. I don't think any of those made the K-12 bill, but there's none here in the property tax bill.
So, Madam Chair, it's Madam not Chair, that they were property tax that. Items. It's that they were just not doing that.
Senator Scoy, Representative Carlson. We're having trouble hearing you on.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had a bill in this, in Representative Saylor for a fund transfer. It's a issue with asbestos in a school in Clerbrook-Gonvick, and they were going to utilize their health and safety levy, and it requires legislation to allow that. We have a history of having allowed that in the past, and the school district needs that to occur this year. Maybe the E-12 conference committee will resolve that, but what Representative Saylor told me, and maybe this is not correct, was that it was dealt with in the property tax area on the House. That's what Representative Greiling had told her. Maybe they just weren't doing that.
Not doing them. Right.
So we'll see what's going on in the E-12 conference committee.
Yeah.
Just wanted to know what was going on there.
Okay. So, and you know, a couple things have come up here, members. Just we want to get for the Senate for all the conferees, if we can, not tonight. The number of taxpayers affected by the various disabled homestead relief. They're different. We buzzed past those, but Senator Bach has raised it with me, so we'll get that later. And I think in the interest of time, if we can, we don't need line by line on the PTR impacts, and we don't need line by line on limited market value. We can just see all those impacts. So if we can compress a little to get through the end of the spreadsheet, on the bottom of page, these have page numbers?
Page 9.
Page 9.
Page 9.
And then we won't do all the other pages.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, where would you like to start?
Well, where were we? We were on,
I think,
line 239.
239, yep.
239, I will summarize very briefly and then let Ms. Schill take over with the House position. 239 is an increase in the property utility, in the utility property tax rates to compensate for the change in the utility rule that was what took effect earlier this year. The House and the Senate positions are very similar, except the House phases in its approach.
The Senate phases.
I'm sorry.
The House
Senator
does not.
Bach must think it. I want to change jobs or something. I really don't. The Senate phases in its approach.
Okay, moving on. Lines 240 through 244 reflect positions of House File 2142, the Citizens Property Tax Relief Bill. While most of these changes have a modest fiscal impact, the most costly item is the one-year extension of the deadline to claim a property tax refund. It's coming in at $4.2 million beginning in 2008. Similarly, lines 245 through 250 are provisions from Representative Lanning's and Paymar's bill to delay for 2 years the scheduled phase-out of the limited market value credit. The overall impact is a cost savings of $530,000 in fiscal 09 and $450,000 in 10 and $1.9 million in 11. That's reflected on line 250. Line 251 is duplexes. Representative Loeffler coming in at $650,000 per year.
And the Senate does not have any of those provisions that we just went through. Line 252 is the Senate's provision to extend the limited market value to Class C homestead resorts, and you can see it's a very nominal cost.
Similar is Representative Simpson's bill coming in at about $13,000 per year. This is 1C Homestead Resorts increasing threshold to $600,000 at a rate of 0.5%.
And on the next line, the Senate provides Oh, that's one you didn't want to hear about. But it's the PTR impact for the Med Council transit bonds. And then in the next category, it is actually the PTR impacts for the education funding and the buy-down of the levies that does happen in the education bill. And typically we carry these impacts in the property tax bill. So for the first line, which is the Senate line, it's $3.4 million in 08-09 and $6.4 in 10 and 11.
The House impact is reflected on line 260. It's about $3.9 million the first year and slightly decreasing in each year of the tails. Ours is based on $125 million in additional aid, and I think yours is slightly less. I think that's what the difference is.
You are correct. Madam Chair, members, the next line is an appropriation to the Department of Ed for general education aid to eliminate the taconite subtraction offset.
Moving to page 9, we're in the other appropriations section, which consists of appropriations to the Department of Revenue for three studies in fiscal 2008 and expanded 1099 income tax reporting, coming in at $131,000 over the 08-09 biennium. Lines 271, 273, and 275 contain grant funding for bioscience regional investments at $1 million a year, the Land Conservation Incentive Act at $1 million per year, and the cellulosic ethanol line at $4.73 million in 09.
And the only item that the Senate had in this section was the nonprofit taxpayer assistance grants, and you see those costs are bracketed and they've been removed because they were being carried in the state government bill. However, that bill has been vetoed, so we're kind of monitoring that to see that that happens in the resurrected bill.
Did you carry that anywhere?
I think we put it in the state gov finance bill, which now is vetoed.
We should.
It's a good idea.
It's a good idea. We should. That's a good program.
It is. We have to find it.
I would
figure out who's going to carry it eventually. Michelle.
I would also like to make the comment, line 269, the truth in taxation money is actually using the money from the penalty revenues that we talked about in line 168. So it's being funneled back into the Department of Revenue. And the very last thing that we have on page 9 are the transfers to the budget reserve. The House transfers $30 million in FY08.
And the Senate transfers $629 million. And in addition, we're showing the interest revenue, or the interest revenues there, because we are also making sure that they stay in the budget reserve. And then, members, you can see the bottom lines there with the last line. Line 285 is revenues minus the expenditures. And you can, I'll let you read the numbers yourself to see where we end up on both sides.
Just so you know, as this reflects back to the base budget, House File 2362 spends a total of $3.51 billion in the 08-09 biennium and almost $3.66 billion in FYs 10 and 11. Senate File 1024 spends $3.48 million in FY 08-09 and $3.89 billion in 10 and 11.
Ms. Schill and Ms. Von Mosch, we thank you profusely. We all thank you. Senator Bach, I know you would agree with me that the House and Senate fiscal staff, the public has no idea how much work that took to create that spreadsheet, track everybody's bills, and folks have no idea how much work the Department of Revenue put into all those estimates to get us all those numbers. So we appreciate that.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have a small budget reserve for each of the chairs of the committee. This is $100,000. I just wanted to let you know, this is from all the fiscal staff, that you can count on us when you need an extra $100,000.
Thank you.
I think we can do Thief
that.
River Falls.
Thief River Falls.
Thief River Falls.
Thank you.
I'd like to throw my money into that.
Thank you, Michelle, and all of you. And seriously, to all the staff here, we appreciate so very much what they do to keep this legislature running. Senator Bach, we had another really productive night, didn't we, Mr. Manson?
Very good.
And I think what we did not get to is that staff has prepared to look at those studies and attempt to prioritize, and then we've still got LGA runs. Look at the bills. I mean, we haven't looked at the runs yet. We don't want to do that tonight, do we? Okay, so thank you all. Yes?
Do you think we could resolve environmental remediation before we go?
I've heard they would like us to wait. Is that correct? Yes. We've got a Comfrey on each side of the table nodding, yes, please wait. So we're
dangerous.
I know. Okay. I know. Thank you. We're adjourned.
All right, good.